at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter, The Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook. You click on that and you like us there. What else am I forgetting? I'm forgetting something, right?
Are you on Pinterest?
I'm not on Pinterest. Would you like to talk there, somebody?
And me, Chuck John.
That wasn't a bad
That was
impression.
A pretty good impersonation of me, yeah.
It was better than yours of me.
My Gilbert Godfrey?
Yeah, you're everybody. You're Charles Salvatore. What? I'm Matthew Aaron.
Take off your clothes. Get naked.
Lenny was telling some random broad that story last night. So it was so embarrassing. All right, I'm here with Charles Salvatore.
Hello.
I'm here with...
Mikey Terzo.
Lee Capreas.
Lee Capreas, hello.
He's back. Okay,
And looking good.
I just got Frank Grillo's phone number. I'm going to call Frank here. We're going to start with Frank Grillo right off the bat. And then I'm going to go into my interview with Nick Searcy at about 9 o'clock our time, Central time there, 7 o'clock Pacific time. There's Luisi with a bunch of fruity drinks. And I mean that literally. There's fruit in them. I am not prejudiced in any way. Okay. So I'm going to call Frankie Grillo. Are you ready to talk to Frankie Grillo in End of Watch? He plays Sarge. He was in The Gray. He was in Warrior. You remember The Gray? We promoted it 55
yes,
million
movie.
Times.
Wolves, yes, I've seen
I think
good
Frank
movie.
Grillo should get a Best Supporting Actor Oscar for that fucking movie. And Warrior, he's great in that movie. He plays the Mickey role. You do a pretty decent Mickey because it's the same impression for everybody. Charles, you want to do your Burgess Meredith?
Can't you chase a little chicken rock?
It's the same fucking impression.
That was nothing like Gilbert Godfrey.
No, you just toned it down a
yeah,
little.
Yeah, but why does Gilbert Godfrey sound like Matt Aaron?
Have you ever hung out with a drunk Matt Aaron?
That's a long time ago.
Woo! You know who did a good Burgess Meredith impression?
Frank, is that you?
That is Frank.
Hey, how you doing, Frank? It's Matt. How you doing, pal?
What's up, brother?
I miss talking to you. How's everything going, huh? End of Watch.
You know, it's good, yeah. I'm here in L.A. in Santa Monica, beautiful Santa Monica, California.
Oh, it is beautiful in Santa Monica. Is it hot there today? Is it still 100?
It was nice. No, it was like 80 degrees, and I was on the beach, and it was beautiful.
Oh, that's beautiful, brother. That's beautiful. So... All right, we're going to talk about End of Watch. I got a million of your other projects we need to talk about. I know you're going to rehearsals tonight for something. What are you doing?
I'm doing a film with Jason Statham and James Franco and Winona Ryder, Vincent D'Onofrio, and Kate Bosworth called Homefront that Gary Fleet is directing. Really cool pick that Sylvester Stallone wrote it, and he's producing it.
Oh, a sly movie.
It's a fun movie. Bikers and... Chicks
you know,
and,
but Frank,
you know.
I gotta tell you, I've never heard of any of those people in the movie. None of them. not one.
I know, right?
But you know what, Frank? That's what you got going on, brother. You're in those movies right now where everyone's in the fucking movies, man. You are in those movies.
Good. You know, you kind of fucking show up and you do your thing and you leave, and but they're kind of adding up, I guess, after a while.
I mean, what's the film that you're in? You got pushed back to January, Gangster Squad, right?
Oh, Gangster Squad. Yeah. I got a little piece of that. George Sean Penn and Josh Brolin, Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone, a few people.
A few people. No one big, huh? all right, so let's talk about End of Watch, which opens this Friday, correct?
Yes.
Okay, it opens this Friday. It's Jake Gyllenhaal. It's Michael Pena. Anna Kendrick's in it, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yourself.
Yeah, great. Myself. Hey, America Ferrara. Cody Horn.
Who is, Cody Horn. Frank, she is a babe. I'm telling you right now, brother.
Yeah.
I think.
She's a baby. She's a young little thing.
Well, okay. I'm a young little thing, Frank. Right. It's all right. I'm a young little
Watch
thing.
Watch what you say there, Matt.
You're youngish. Don't confuse it, Matt. Don't confuse it.
She's not 29. She's younger than 29.
She is much younger than 29. But you're in the range. You're in the range. But you know, and she's like 6'1" tall without heels on. So
okay,
with heels on.
Yeah, that's not going to work for her. That's not going to work
She's in Liam Neeson territory.
Okay. Oh wow. And speaking of Liam Neeson territory, once again, I'm gonna tell our listeners. I'm sure they've all seen it by now though, because I promoted the fuck out of it. The Gray is one of the best movies of the year. I'm telling you, you should be nominated for it. I'm serious. I'm dead fucking serious.
Well,
and I think,
I'm going to tell you right here for the first time, Open Road Films, Tom Ortenberg and company, great studio. They early on said, we're going to release this in January, but if it does what we think it'll do and we believe in the film, we're going to do an awards campaign for the movie, and that's what they're doing. We're in the middle of putting it together now, and
oh, that's great.
They're going to do a big push for awards season. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a dark horse. It's a long shot because of the kind of film it is, but it's nice to see a company, you know, put their money where their mouth is.
But now that they're doing basically 10, I mean, they had 9 last year, but basically they're doing around 8 to 10 best films of the year.
Yeah.
And as of right now, as it stands, it's in my top 5. So I would think it's got a legitimate shot at this point in time.
Well, I'll tell you, I was just up in Venice. I had a movie up at Venice Film Festival, and I got to see The Master and a couple other films. There's some good stuff coming down the pike. Silver Linings Playbook with that David O. Russell did with
Bradley Cooper.
And Jennifer Lawrence, De Niro. And there's some good stuff coming down the line. The Gray, it'll be, like I said, I think it'll be a long shot, but I think it's certainly, if we get people to open up the DVD and watch it, I think people will be surprised.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I would also find it hard to believe that you gotta get that many people to watch it at this point. It did pretty well, and I know it was a hot movie for people in Hollywood, especially because there was some controversy behind it, because of Gavin Pallone and his big fucking mouth, and you know, I gotta tell you, brother, that just turned out to be nonsense. That didn't do a dent in the box office for you.
No.
And by the way, Premium Rush didn't do so hot. I just want to throw that out there.
No,
but anyway.
So good. Right. I mean, it didn't do any business, you know. By the way, I don't know. The film business is in an interesting state, I think, because, you know, these movies are opening. You know, like I think Bradley Cooper's lucky that this silver, and it's David O. Russell. He's a brilliant filmmaker. But, you know, he just did this movie, The Words, and you think, okay, it's Bradley Cooper, and it's Zoe Saldana, right? The movie did no business. So this theory of, okay, we'll make stars, and the stars will make us money, it's just nonsense.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Good films make money.
Right.
The star system's dying, and now that's why you're seeing so many stars in the same movies, is because they're getting paid less, but they're also making better movies. They've learned that the way you make money now is by making legitimately good movies.
And
by the way, you know, you got your guys, like you got your Denzels and your Brad Pitts and, you know, these kind of guys, and they're in a whole league of their own. They really are.
Yeah.
Everybody else, these people who they're telling us are stars, and not really. It's just not, it's a different world. It's a different world.
Yeah, Mike Binder and I were talking about it, and there's basically Denzel, Adam Sandler. I mean, there's basically 5 guys
Mark
that can
Wahlberg.
Open a movie.
Yeah, there's Mark Wahlberg can open a film. You know, he jumps from genre to genre. There are a few of these guys, Will Smith, even Cruz struggles a bit, but, you know, Pitt can do whatever he wants to do. But it's being an actor and seeing the guys who get the movies, and I like them. They're all nice guys, and I don't begrudge them at all, but it's kind of interesting to see who Hollywood is, you know, puts on the throne of movie stardom.
No, I agree. And by the way, I mean, The Gray isn't your only shot. You got Zero Dark Thirty and End of Watch is getting phenomenal reviews. So you possibly
movie,
have
yeah.
3 shots
yeah.
that get nominated.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so, you know, so listen, if it makes me a little bit more money and my kids could have new jeans instead of used jeans, I'll take it.
I don't know. I don't know, Frank. That used look is kind of in. You know, you get the...
It's kind of in, right?
Yeah, thrift.
I know. But tell your 8-year-old kid that.
Yeah, that's true. That's
put them on.
And by the way, I want Frank to buy me new jeans, too. So let's hope they all do real well.
I want to buy you a Cadillac.
Oh, Frank, there you go.
Yeah.
There you
just found the way to Matthew Aaron
Hart. I just need that next bump, and you're getting a Cadillac delivered, my friend.
That's what I love. That's the New Yorker in him right there. I love that. Generous Italian New Yorker right there. Frank, I don't think we talked about this story last time you were on, but I think this is a great story. Your parents didn't want you to be an actor, correct? And you went to business school?
Yeah, I went to school as a business major and always had my hand in acting, you know, like, because I lived in New York, so it was everywhere. But, I went to business school, got my degree, and never did anything with it. I mean, I actually worked while I was in school. I worked on Wall Street. The story gets blown up a bit. It makes it sound like I worked at a big firm, and, you know, I worked on Wall Street for like 9 months, and it was kind of like a second job, and then... started, you know, my journey into superstardom.
yeah, that's a great story about how you got discovered. And
let me tell you, it's just been such an easy rise.
You've worked hard, brother, but you're choosing some great projects, so you're giving yourself a big leg up there.
Yeah, you know, it takes a while to get to a place that you kind of feel good about what you're doing, and so you kind of take less money and you try to work with really great people and get noticed. And it's a scary proposition when you have a wife and three children, but so far we haven't been kicked out of our apartment.
Well, that's fantastic news.
That's
I got kicked out of my apartment to the point where I'm in my mother's basement.
Yeah.
So
and I got kicked out of my place too.
And I gotta tell you, Frank, I want to share the story, but I sent you an email. I gave a guest lecture last week at DePaul, and we were talking about you, and I think the kids wanted to know more about Frank Grillo, so that's good news for you.
Oh, I love it. And you've been, you know what, you're my boy, man. You're just great. You've been great to me. You've been great to the greats. I mean, everything. You know, you're just like I don't even know how to. It's the Cadillac. It's coming because I don't even know how to.
Okay. We're tribe members, pal. Yeah. So what I want to talk about,
brother.
End of Watch comes out Friday. We encourage everyone to go see it. You play Sarge in the film. And also,
yeah.
I mean, hopefully I'll have you on again before the end of the year so we can talk Zero Dark 30 and stuff. I want to save that for next time. But End of Watch, okay, first I just wanted to ask you, what was the experience like getting involved with that film? And you know, did you expect it to turn out as good as it did?
That's funny. As you're talking to me, I'm outside in Santa Monica, and a bus is going by with an End of Watch poster.
Sweet.
You know, I was a big fan of David Ayer, the writer-director from Training Day, which was one of my favorite movies. And he had seen Warrior, and we chatted, and he kind of laid down what it was. And I knew it was kind of a real two-hander with Jake and Michael, and he told me that these guys were just they had been working together for months to kind of create this friendship. And he told me about how he wanted to film it and stuff. And I was like, you know what, bro? I'll play a car in the movie. I'll do whatever you want me to do. I want to be part of this. And, you know, you just say the word and I'm in. And he did. He offered me the job. And, you know, it was about a month of rehearsals and getting to ride along with the cops. And I got to tell you, as far as writing and directing this genre, these cops, I don't think there's a better guy out there than David Ayer. I mean, he lives this stuff.
No, he does. And this is a totally different cop movie than Training Day and the other cop films he's done.
Yeah.
Because this is just legitimate. It is the story of two guys on the street. You know, a bunch of you basically follow them around on a bunch of stops along their way.
Let me tell you, it's really authentic. It really is. And I think people will get a look at Jake Gyllenhaal and see what he's capable of doing, because I know, you know, a lot of people think, oh, he's just a really great-looking guy who's a product of Hollywood, but he is phenomenal in this movie, as is Pena. You know, they really carry the movie there, the heart and soul of the film. And then everybody else is kind of peppered in throughout, and you know, David Ayer makes really good use of all these supporting actors as well, because they're all really talented. And I think he did a phenomenal job. I really do. I you know, I had another film in Toronto. I didn't get to go to End of Watch's premiere in Toronto, but I got there on the tail of it. I come from Venice, and there was such great buzz. People really responded to the way the film was shot. So I got my fingers crossed.
Right. Well, you have that really good gritty look in the movie where there's a lot of security camera footage and the cruiser cam footage, and it just adds to the realism of it. It's a very attractive choice that they made.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and I think it's going to go two ways with this, because I think there are people who are so kind of anti-found footage / you know, a lot of movement in the film. You know, there are those people who are just from the school of, you know, make a film the way we're used to seeing films, which is a big master shot, and then over this shoulder and over that shoulder.
Right.
So I think we'll have, I think they'll have our critics, but for the most part, from what I've been reading and listening to, I think people really kind of dig it. You know, it's always, listen, I think for my money, it's always a cool genre.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
So when you try to, you know, when you put a little twist on it, you make some interesting choices with the camera. We'll see what happens.
Well, Frank, I want to make some news together. I want to have some fun. So do you mind if I give Joe Carnahan a call real quick?
Oh, do it, man. I do. I know he's in Pittsburgh right now.
Yes, he is. But he, we'll get him.
When you're in Pittsburgh, you could use a friend.
Joe answers for Matthew Aaron.
I hate Joe Cayenne. He won't answer the phone. He never answered the phone.
Who's do that thing from Fight Club where you answer and call the person back?
I'm sorry.
Listen,
but
Carnahan.
The person you called has a voicemail box that
I accidentally hung up on Frank. I got to call him back.
Okay.
Okay. By the way, I need to call Frank back. Because,
can I just say it's good to be back on this show?
Yes. Frank's thinking right now, did that motherfucker just hang up on me?
Yeah.
He couldn't get Joe, so he said enough for Frank?
Just tell him Joe told you to do that.
Okay. By the way. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, Frank. Okay.
Oh, he's mad at you. He's not picking up.
Oh, boy.
Not only didn't you get him, but you see what happens with Conan? It's the bad mojo.
Listen,
he
sent me a text message literally 10 minutes ago. He goes, call me, bro. I'm gonna pick up. I go, okay.
Try him again. I just texted him, telling him to pick up the phone.
He sent you a text specifically saying that he would answer his phone too.
Right, which is typical Joe. That's about right.
Yeah, he's a crackpot. Joe Conahan has massive drug problems. You guys know that, right?
Well, it explains a lot.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's why he's a welcome guest.
I think he struggles with his sexuality as well. I'm not sure.
Oh. Yeah, what else?
Maybe he's on the shitter.
Yeah, he's a coward. He's a coward.
Okay. Well.
No, he won't answer the phone.
I'm sorry.
No.
The person you called has a voice.
You're going to hang up on me again.
No, I'm not hanging up on you. I'm going to wait for Joe to call me. I'm going to tell him, listen, Carnahan, call
leave a
me.
Message, bro.
All right, well, I'll get started by asking you this, because there was a reason I wanted to ask you about Joe. And
About his sexuality.
Oh, yeah, no, we've cleared that up. And by the way, none of our fans are shocked. It's okay. I've gotten so many emails saying...
Well, you're not...
I mean, it's bravado, all that nonsense. It's all bullshit.
Right.
Yes. So...
My favorite movie is actually Sense and Sensibility.
I do know Joe's on the phone at the moment, so he'll get a hold of us. Okay, but here's what I was going to ask. Joe posted something on Twitter a few weeks ago, and I think you know what I'm referring to, Frank.
Yeah.
Your test screening for Continue.
Yeah.
Which
is crazy.
Right, which everyone knows that Joe talked about on the show, and we've talked numerous times. This script is phenomenal for Continue. I mean, I guess the best comparison is it's like the Groundhog's Day of action movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And explain to me, I was going to ask Joe, but I guess we got to wait for him. What's the hot water? What was the deal that he was in trouble for putting
you
that
know,
up?
I'll give you a quick lesson about Hollywood, and I'm sure you guys already know this. You know, I'm not Ryan Reynolds, and I'm not, you know, Jeremy Renner, and there's nobody's going to lay that much money, a studio, on my back because I come in. And I'm the third guy. I'm the second guy sometimes and the third guy. And, you know, so Hollywood doesn't work that way. And it has nothing to do. It's not a meritocracy. It's not who's the best. It's simply a matter of, do you fit into the algorithm? And I met with Joe. Joe is amazing. Joe is an enigma because there's not many directors that would do this. And, he wanted to surpass the Renners and the Reynolds and the Pines. And he said, I want Frank Grillo. You know, I worked with him, and I want this guy. And to his credit, I met with Rothman, who was the head of Fox at the time, and we did a screen test that Ridley Scott paid for, and hopefully they get their money back. And at the end of the day, they just weren't willing to give the money for me, you know, because I don't have some kind of value that they see.
So what I'm wondering is there a chance that you do it at another studio? Is there a chance you guys do it maybe at a lower budget?
It's tough to get a film away from a studio, especially I know Fox loves that studio. But, you know, now since then, and I don't want to say it's because I put a jinx on Tom Rothman, because I did. But he's been fired.
Yes, he has.
He made that movie with, I think it was Pine and Tom Hardy and Reese Witherspoon that made $9.
Yeah.
I think he was kind of moved out of the company. So it'll be interesting to see what happens now. But that's how those guys work. You know, they're all afraid for their jobs. And, every movie could be their last movie, and I get it. I get it, you know, until you're in a movie like The Hangover or, you know, where you have global recognition. You know, they don't want to bank on. And by the way, I could shock you by the names that we think are movie stars that the studio says, oh, no, no, no.
Oh,
they have no
right.
value.
Yeah. I'm well aware. Yeah. I'm right. well aware. I wrote a film last year, and we were shopping it around, and we had what we thought were A-list names, and no, not to them.
No.
Not
no.
to them. There's
it's
a small list.
And you know what? It's all about, and it goes, it's like a wave, man. It's like from week to week it changes. You know, Jeremy Renner 1 week is the guy, and then all of a sudden maybe Bourne isn't tracking the way it should be tracking, and all of a sudden they're thinking about maybe Jeremy Renner isn't so great. Meanwhile, the guy's nominated every time he works, you know? It's like, forget about trying to chase the dragon.
Hello. Where's Frank? Did we lose him? I didn't lose him. He's still on.
Okay.
Frank?
Yeah.
You there? Oh, we lost.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
You,
oh,
you cut out for a second.
Yeah.
Get back to chasing the dragon.
You're chasing the dragon.
Yeah, I was just saying, you know, the studios, instead of chasing the dragon, should hire the right guy for the job, and people will show up for the film.
Right.
It always happens.
Well, that's,
you know?
Joe's belief so. Would continue, and that's why he wants you in the role, because you're perfect for the role, and that's how you make the best movie, and that's how it makes money.
And by the way, there's a guy who walked away, you know, and then he said to the studio, okay, let's see who you have. And that didn't pan out, so he walked away from it. You know, I got to tell you, Joe Carnahan is a one. There are a few guys in this business that I just I scratch my head because the mold was broken with these guys, and Joe Carnahan is one of them. I you know, again, I would do anything for that guy, and I mean on a personal level. I just love him, you know, regardless of his sexuality and
right.
all the drugs that he takes.
Uh-huh.
I would do anything for that guy because he really truly is. He's true blue. I mean, right, you know, to the bone.
Very good. I you know what? I absolutely agree with you about Joe. I love Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a phone call, 973. 973, you are on.
It's Bruce.
Bruce!
Hey.
Bruce! Bruce Fretz, TV Guide's Bruce Fretz, and FretzOnFilm.com.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
Oh.
No, not Nick. It's Frank.
No, you could call me Nick. A lot of people call me Nick.
Are you calling for Nick Searcy right now, Bruce?
But Nick was the co-host.
Frank,
no.
What's...
hosting tonight?
No, Frank. Nick's on in an hour. What are you doing, Bruce? Are you on Alzheimer's?
Frank, what's it like being Unjustified?
Yeah.
I'm on tape delay.
Can I just say, Justified has changed my life. I mean, it's just enabled me to put my kids through school. It's great. No, I like, that's a good show, man. That's a show with Walt Goggins.
Yep, that's
yeah.
exactly right.
Yeah.
All right, I will say this. I'll save Bruce's ass here. Bruce, why don't you let Frank know what you thought of The Gray and the review you gave it on FretzOnFilm.com?
Oh, I love The Gray. It's also in my top 10, definitely, for the year. We'll see if it makes the top 5 when I see all these big fall movies, but... I think it's one of the best films of the year, man. And when I called him before, I was talking to Frank about, you know, kind of the double shot of Warrior and The Gray. That really kind of put him on the map for me as an actor. And now it's like, you know, when I see his name, I'm like, oh, I got to see that. That's, you know.
Oh, that's great,
that's
man. And again, we were just kind of talking about this, about studios and getting movies made. And, you know, that's
yeah.
kind of what changed my life is, you know, those two movies back to back. And they just happen to be movies that guys like us did.
Yeah.
Because there's not a lot of them. There's not a lot of them. And so to be in two
That's
of them
true.
In a six-month period was a gift. And it was you know what it is? I got to tell you, it's the thing about being an actor. Most of it is luck. It's
yeah.
luck.
Because
yeah. You can't plan it out. I use Cooper a lot because, you know, there's a guy who worked really hard for a long time and did a lot of little roles, and then he got a hangover. And it changed
right.
his life. It
yeah.
changed
right.
his life. So, you know, who knows? But much appreciated.
Well,
let
me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Nick Searcy. I loved you in Fried
Man,
Green Tomatoes. You were great in Fried Green Tomatoes. Loved your performance. But
hey, did you see me in Dude, Where's My Car? I mean, I was phenomenal.
Let me ask you this, Frank, because Bruce is putting out an article tomorrow that you can catch. Where, Bruce? Where's your blog for Sundance at?
I got a blog that I just started on the Sundance Channel's website. It's called Sunfiltered is the name of the blog. And so I'm writing about film and politics for them. And I've got a blog going up tomorrow about Death Wish because they're just starting to show the original Death Wish
Ooh,
on the Sundance
wow.
Channel. So
wow.
I wanted to ask you about the remake because I rewatched the original again, and it's, you know, it's a powerful piece of work, but it's got a real strong political point of view to it too. And is the new version going to be as political as the original one was?
You know, I don't know. And you know, it's funny because I actually had a meeting today with a guy who's probably in his just about 50. That was kind of his favorite movie was Death Wish. I mean, he talked about it, and he said, you know, they can't remake Death Wish because it was a time when politically police were becoming powerless to crime, and it was a very interesting time. There were no computers, there was no internet, there was no, you know, information.
Right.
We had half the information. So it's going to be interesting to see, to remake Death Wish, and this is where Carnahan is brilliant. It's got to be, a new take on vigilantism. It's a new take on corruption, on the system. And I think what he wants to do with it, it's a two-hander. It's two brothers instead of just one guy. And I think it's far more character-driven than the original Death Wish. And
it would be less character-driven than the original Death Wish. I know.
Oh, yeah, that's what the sequels were.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Carnahan is, with his writing and what he's doing right now, because I've read a couple of the things that he's written, this guy is so dialed in to what he's doing. Like, he's about, I think he is about to explode. I really do.
Yeah.
I think people are really going to understand Joe for who he is, if I can get him to shut up.
Yeah.
All
well,
we need to do is get him to shut up.
We can't get him to talk on this show right now.
Yeah, we're having the opposite problem.
You're the only guy, because that guy doesn't shut up.
Yeah, well, no, he's great on the show. Every time I've had him on, it's like 2 hours of Joe. I had him and William. I had him and William Friedkin on, Frank, at the same time,
God.
And I literally, you might as well have thought I wasn't on the show. It was the Joe Carnahan show. It was the Joe Carnahan show, and it was great.
For a guy, he's a guy who's Joe has more knowledge about films, about books, about pop culture. He's so smart, and he kills a little piece of me dies to even say this to you guys. I mean, he's one of the smartest guys I know, and to look at him, he'd be like, no way.
Joe's gonna save this show, and he's gonna download all your quotes as ringtones, so every time you call up, he'll say, Joe is the smartest guy ever.
Well, now I understand why you and Joe get along so well, Matt.
that's great. Bruce, did you see End of Watch yet? Is it on your things to do?
Oh, I'm definitely going to see it. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but I'll be blogging about it on Frets on Film, absolutely.
Fretsonfilm.com, you can catch the blog there. Frank, so now you know to go read that this weekend. Fretsonfilm.com, if Bruce stabs you in the back now with a bad review, he set himself up right here.
Bruce, don't do it. No. Please, baby, don't do it. And you know what? Try to get a TV series. Maybe I can get a TV series.
I was just going to ask you that.
Great.
I was just going to ask you that because, all right, you're talking about maybe you're the third banana in film. Frank, I think you could lead a TV show.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I have. Yeah, and that's kind of something that we're looking out for. It would have to be something cool because after working with so many great people, I don't know that network TV is a place for me because I'm a little...
No, you're not. You're not network.
Yeah.
You already did network with the soaps.
But I look at guys like Cranston who are doing amazing work on television, and Michael Shannon and Shea Whigham on Boardwalk, and these kind of guys. To me, that's a great gig to have, and they're still doing movies. And so that would be a good way to feed my kids.
So you're not going to do the Guiding Light movie.
The Guiding Light movie. No. Let me tell you something about those. But let me tell you something. Those fans don't go away.
No, they don't. You've got to be, the older women have got to be all over you.
Bro, I was in Venice, Italy for a week with my wife, and we were attacked by Guiding Light fans.
That's insane.
Yeah, they still write the TV guide to complain about that show getting canceled.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
crazy.
Let me ask.
Committed. It's like part of their lives, you know?
I know.
So, Frank, you're definitely in on Death Wish then, right?
I mean, as far as Joe Carnahan is concerned, I'm the other brother. You know, there's two brothers, and, Joe and I, if Joe and I could just work together for the rest of our lives, we really have a good thing going, you know? So,
yes. Yeah,
I mean, so far, that's kind of the idea. Now, whether it gets to the studio and they say, I don't know if we want that guy in Frank... I don't know. I won't let him, do what he did with Continue in my defense and cost him a film. So I'm planning on it, but if it doesn't happen, he'll be doing it. Trust me, I'll be doing Death Wish.
So what's the timetable for Death Wish? Do you know? I mean, I would ask Joe, and Joe would be like, bro, here's the timetable, bro. I'm going to tell you right fucking now. All right, here's the fucking timetable.
No,
that's my
Joe.
I think
soon. I mean, I think, you know, from what I'm hearing, he's written a great script, and they love the script, and he's you know, he's got to do a little bit of, a little tiny bit of work on it. But I think they want to fast-track the thing. I think they're looking to go into production by, you know, the first quarter of next year, which is January-ish.
So they're looking for a release in the end of next year?
Yeah, I would say so, definitely. And I think it'd be more of a winter film. I'm not sure. I don't know. Because it's so dark, and but we'll see what happens. I know that's what he's focusing on right now.
I'm gonna let Joe embarrass me again. I'm gonna call him up. Maybe with an esteemed critic like Bruce Fretz on the phone. He'll answer this time. At least for Matthew Carnahan's show, House of Lies. Bruce needs to be given some cheers for that.
Yeah.
So here we go. I'm going to try Joe again. He's going to say, bro, I'm busy.
Bro, I'm busy. I'm screwing all your ex-girlfriends.
Right.
He'll be wrestling a unicorn when you call him.
All right, I'm going to try again. Wait just a second. No, that wasn't him. That wasn't him. I was getting excited over nothing.
That's him. Oh, wait, that's ringing.
I can't believe he's not answering the phone.
Oh.
But the person you called
Yes, we know. The person we called has a voicemail box that's full.
It's not been kicked in. Yeah, or full.
Yeah, or it's full. Yeah, because Joe doesn't check his messages.
You know what, Joe? What time is it in the East Coast? 9:30? He's in a bar in Pittsburgh, and he's shit-faced.
He told me, and I'm just going to rat him out now because he's not answering. He told me he was on the phone with his brother at about 6 o'clock. So,
Matthew?
Yeah. So him and Matthew are doing some gossiping about the business or something.
Yeah, that guy's
sure.
Not too talented either, huh?
No. Yeah, that whole family, man, they can write. They can direct.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
World War Z, that's going to be an interesting film. Let me ask more about End of Watch here. Now, End of Watch, Jake Gyllenhaal. Now, were you on board after they casted the leads, or did they know they...
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it was Jake and Michael had signed on early, really early, and they went to work together, for months before creating this relationship, and it's beautiful on screen.
Okay, so you got signed on, and now are we going to see more of you in action? Because you're not in a lot of action in End of Watch. You're the guy in the precinct. You're the Sarge. You're in charge. But is there going to be some Frank Grillo action maybe in 030? Maybe what do you got coming out that we're going to maybe see Frank Grillo in action?
Action and more action, kind of like, you mean gray action, warrior action type stuff?
I want to see you with a gun, brother. I want to see you with a gun. I want to see you mowing down punks.
Or a dame.
I got this great movie that was in Venice called Disconnect, which is not a... There's a great fight scene in that with me and somebody else, but it's a drama. It's a straight drama. Me and Bateman, Skarsgård, and Andrea Riseborough, and Hope Davis. It's a phenomenal movie. I got that coming out. I have Gangster Squad, which it's a bit boring what happens between me and Penn. I won't give it away. I don't know what the final cut of Zero Dark Thirty will look like. There's a lot of people in the movie. And a lot has happened since the movie's been made, so I don't know where the cut leans towards. What else? Oh, Intersection. Yeah, I got to do a big movie where I'm the guy for Luc Besson.
I love Luc Besson.
Intersection. Yeah,
sometimes.
It's a straight-up thriller that David Marconi wrote it. He wrote Enemy of the State with Tony Scott.
Oh.
And he directed this, and it's a thriller. It's a Luc Besson action thriller, and me and my wife and a bunch of Moroccans, and it's really cool.
That's what you were in Morocco for.
Yeah, it's called Intersection.
How was Morocco? Was it great? Was it
I was in the Sahara Desert where it borders Algeria. It's a dark part of the world. I mean, it's beautiful. The Sahara Desert is beautiful for a little while, but. It's these people, they don't get along, you know. So it's a dangerous place, and I didn't get to see my family for a while, so fucked me up a bit. But and then I just did a film with Hilary Swank that Philip Noyce directed for HBO. But no drama though. I play a dad whose kid dies. Me and Hilary, and it's a beautiful piece, but I don't know if it's up your guy's alley.
Philip, oh. Philip Noyce, he's never done anything either.
Hillary Swank, she's never won an award.
No, no, no. And you know what? Yeah. What's the film you saw? Conviction?
Compliance?
No, what? No, Compliance.
Conviction.
What's the one with Hillary Swank you
yes,
saw?
Yes, that's Conviction.
You thought
Conviction.
She was very good
Conviction
at it. She
was one of my buddies. One of my buddies was Sammy Rockwell.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. We,
yeah.
Yeah. There was a lot of good performances in that. That was an actor's movie,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, Lee was telling me I'd like that one.
Yeah.
I just want to see Continue get made, though, because it's such a great fucking idea.
I know, man. It's a great script, and what he did with the script is fantastic. And, I don't think that's dead. And I don't know that it gets made with me as in that role. There's another role that maybe, but I think it'll come back. I think it'll come back around. I don't know. Maybe he gets it away from the studio now that the studio's changing. The guard is changing,
yeah,
so we'll see what happens.
That's true.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, I can't get Joe on at the moment. Do you know anything about the Daredevil situation? Did Joe talk to you at all about that?
I don't. I don't know anything about that one. I didn't know. I don't know what he was doing with it.
I'm gonna fucking grill him about that.
He's
on my list right now, Carnahan. Actually, I got to tell you, I love him. He's helping me out a lot with something. He's the best. He really is. He'll download that as a ringtone too.
He's a guy who he marches to the beat of his own drum, and sometimes that hurts him. But you know what? And it gets him in trouble. But that's why I love him, because everybody in Hollywood is fear based. Joe is not. It's not like he's not quite David Fincher yet. So he can't call his own shots, and yet he's willing to lay it on the line for what he believes in. Who the fuck does that in Hollywood?
Yeah. Right. No,
Gavin O'Connor did it with Warrior. Gavin O'Connor fought for Tom Hardy, who nobody wanted. He fought for Joel Edgerton, and these guys turned out to be superstars.
Bruce, what else do you got for Frank? I'll let you take the floor.
Well, I want to know more about Death Wish, because it seems like you get Death Wish made, then then maybe you can come back continue after that if that's like your stepping stone. So I mean, So it's set in L.A., right? They moved it from New York to L.A.
Set in L.A. and it's a true two-hander. You never know. Like, look, we thought maybe The Gray would pop me enough to help with Continue, but. It's a very esoteric kind of film. You know, people who saw it loved it, and then people didn't see it. So, this business is crazy, It's crazy. Listen, if Justin Timberlake wanted to get Continue made, Joe could make it with Justin Timberlake.
Absolutely.
And I'm not taking anything away from Justin Timberlake, but, I'm not going to Justin Timberlake films. I'm sure he's fine, but it's nothing I want. It's not my type of thing. And it's not Joe's type of thing. Joe, you make The Gray, you don't want to go back. It's tough to go back. You make the movie with Liam Neeson and Badge Dale and Dallas Roberts and Dermot Mulroney. These guys gave everything, and they there was no acting. You don't want to go back to making movies or you don't want to go and make movies, because somebody says this is the most popular guy this week.
Right.
So, that's the dilemma you're in.
Well, the good news is, between Zero Dark Thirty, The Gray, End of Watch, possibly with Intersection, at some point in time, all these look like quality films. You're going to be on the radar. I think you could get it made then.
It's cool. I come to Hollywood and I meet now with the heads of these studios, and it's funny. I was saying to my wife today, because I'm going to go do this movie with Statham and Franco, and it's like one to the next, and you just got to be patient, And it's like you can't count on anything to change your life, but eventually you're in their faces enough, and they automatically think, oh, he's been around forever. Let's hire that guy. And
right.
You just gotta hang around long enough. That's all. You just gotta hang around.
You just gotta stay in their face.
Like crazy, though. There's a number of films you have lined up now. Do you ever sleep, or are you just like constantly going from one to the next? Do you have any breaks between?
Literally, I dropped my bat. My wife and I went to the Venice Film Festival. I came right from South Africa where I was shooting. Went to the Venice Film Festival for a week, then went to Toronto. Dropped my bags in New York. The phone rang and said, "You got this offer on this movie, Homefront." So. I'm so grateful, because I know this is not going to be my life forever, but we got a good run going, and you can just do great work and hope that at some point, if a Continue comes back our way, that maybe we get a shot.
All right, let me ask you this. I know you worked with Jimmy Woods on this Mary and Martha movie for HBO with Philip Noyce.
Love him.
Okay, you love him? I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you because I've heard differing opinions about Mr. Jimmy Woods. You had a great time with him?
You know, I love him because everybody thinks he's crazy.
Well, no, not thinks, Frank. Not thinks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a Republican and he lives in Rhode Island. He's not afraid to share his opinions about life and politics with you. But he's Jimmy Woods, man.
Do you get Jimmy Woods' crazy Republican emails he sends out to people?
I wouldn't give him my email. But we had a blast. We had a blast together tonight. We really, he's a sweetheart of a guy. And I've been a Jimmy Woods fan for a long time.
Oh, he's great.
And Brenda, he was great because Brenda Bleffin, who's a great British stage actress and just a wonderful actress in general, you know, everybody's pretty liberal, you know, and Jimmy is anything but liberal.
Frank, can I tell you something? The only person crazier than Jimmy Woods is Joe Carnahan.
Right.
You know what? But Joe is in on the joke. You know, like Jimmy's not.
I'm not in on the joke.
Is this the real Joe Carnahan, or is this this jerk off who makes believe he's Joe Carnahan?
I thought they were one in the same.
Yeah, right.
They're one in the same. The jerk off that thinks he's Joe Carnahan is Joe Carnahan. Exactly.
Joe, you're not that big of a jerk off.
What's going on, brother?
I'm just waiting for you to call me.
How was young Matthew Aaron treating you on the show? How you doing?
Well, we were talking a lot. We were doing a lot of Carnahan talking. I mean, we were singing your praises, and then, you know,
really?
Is enough at this point. Yeah.
We were mouthing the words to your praises more than singing.
Right. Exactly. Was that Lee?
Yes. Yeah. How you doing?
What's going on, fellas? Oh. How you guys doing?
Joe, what's happening, brother?
It's funny. We were talking, of course, about your films and your career and a lot less about me than I thought and a lot more about you. Anyway, that's not important. What's important is, you know, I was just saying how much I love you and the fact that you are confused about your sexuality never affected our friendship at all.
Never, bro. Never. No, in fact, we bonded over that because I remember you coming to me and saying, I, too, have had these questions, and I'm not sure how to answer them. No,
didn't really.
You know what? Listen, I love Rod Lurie. I think Rod's a great filmmaker. I think that the deviation in this Death Wish is, I think it literally, when I say inspired by the Garfield novel, it's really inspired. I mean, in the most vague kind of nebulous way, because I didn't really adhere to that beyond the revenge, family murdered, the kind of the overarching storyline. But everything else is kind of invention. I thought it was important to set it in a different, you know, milieu and make it to Los Angeles and have him have a relationship with his brother. And I just think it's a much more complex version of Death Wish. And I think you could call it, oddly, I think you could call it a lot of things. I think Death Wish happens to be a title that's quite well known. And I think you could certainly apply it in a 21st century remake kind of way, but it's far from a remake. I think if anything, when the people say it's a reimagining, this is a thorough reimagining of that story.
Right.
So let me ask
Frank Grillo having a character written for him, which will probably be played by Chris Pine. But that's another story.
What did I tell you, Josh? What did I tell you?
Yeah,
no, it's a guy named Frank Grillo in the film being played by Chris Pine.
By Chris Pine or Winona Ryder.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome.
So what is the shoot?
So, yeah, so I think, guys, I think it's in the loosest sense. And again, I don't say that to kind of distance myself because I like everyone else. I'm a big fan of the original, but you know the original in terms of, again, I've said this. You know, you got a bunch of punks moving through a subway car, and they pass the pregnant woman, they pass the elderly couple, and they go and fuck with Bronson. I mean, it just doesn't seem realistic to me. And politically,
we just live in a different world. You know, where the cops.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that anything like that could ever happen now. I mean, there's much more control and so it'd be tough to kind of remake Death Wish the way Bronson did Death Wish, you know. But it was fun to watch back in the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So Joe,
financing this film will be a lot easier to get in place once Frank Grillo gets nominated for Best Supporting Actor for The Gray.
Yeah.
or once Chris Pine actually signs on.
We're waiting for one of those two things to happen. Either I get Pine after Jack Ryan or Frank gets nominated. One of the things is going to determine who plays that role.
Guess where I put my money?
Now, Joe, I asked Frank, and he didn't have a fucking clue. So what's the shooting schedule for this film, and when do you want to release it?
I would love to be shooting this, you know, in February and release it, you know, the following, in the fall. Next year would be brilliant.
Frank did have a clue.
You know, there's no CGI in this film. It's a fairly short schedule comparatively. It's all L.A. locations, which I think is vital and crucial to this particular incarnation of the story. And I think that it's not a difficult film to post, so I'm looking forward to it being a fairly propulsive process. And I just think, listen, if you read it on the page, I think it's met with really with people have been hugely, hugely enthusiastic about the draft. So
is there,
you know, that's exciting.
I know you're probably away from casting process, but there was a rumor, of course, on the internet. Is there any truth to the rumor that you're interested in Robert Downey Jr. to play the lead?
I'm certainly interested in Robert Downey Jr. I'm also interested in Pauly Shore.
So, boyfriend. Thanks for throwing me a bone there, Joe. Thanks a lot.
I'm also looking to reinvent Carrot Top. So there's yes.
Well, there you got rapist number one and you got rapist number one and rapist number two.
Yeah, Emo Phillips will do a cameo.
So, all right, let me ask you this then, Joe. Continue. I was talking about it with Frank. Are you putting it on hold until you think you could pass it through with Frank as the lead?
Well, I would listen. That was my wish, and that's still my goal, because I think that, you know, what people haven't seen, other than the briefly leaked screen test, is the other scenes that Frank did, which I think are, you know, listen, he's my dear friend, but I would say this if we were mortal enemies, but he's remarkable in those scenes, and I just think, again. And we've talked about this in the past, Matt. You know, we got to be ballsy and we got to be inventive, and we can't keep going to the same five guys and trying to get movies made. And I think the only way you break that mold is to recognize that you've got a guy that could be an absolute and is and has all the qualities of a leading man. And I think that that's what you push. And it's a Sisyphean, Herculean effort at times, and it doesn't matter. It's worth it. It's worth the stretch, and it's worth the push, and nothing would make me happier. So... you know, you never know. I mean, things change, but, you know, like I said, I think highly enough of Frank that I wrote, for maybe the first time in my career, I wrote a role specifically for an actor.
That's
and
right.
I wrote that role to be played by Chris Pine for Frank Miller.
Well, I by the way, I just want to tell all our listeners, you should follow Joe Carnahan at Carno Joe on Twitter, because he released these screen tests on Twitter. I think he got into a little bit of trouble, and you can follow at Frank Carello.
No, as I said, he got himself into a pickle, because, you know, he's a guy who you know, walks the walk and talks the talk, and sometimes that's not the most popular guy, but there's about four of those guys in Hollywood, and Joe is one of them. I don't even know if they're who the other three are. Actually, I just don't know. So, but you know, and for me as an actor, and again, we have become, you know, great friends, and I know if we could do every movie together, you know, it would be fantastic. But you know, this is a guy who after the Gray, you know, he knows what he wants to fucking do, and the town knows what he's capable of doing. So it's tough. It's tough not to, you know, when you want to do what you want to do, and they're saying no. It's, you know, Joe Carnahan ain't going to do it. So sometimes I even got to say to him, listen, brother, it ain't happening with me, but you got to go make the movie because it's that good.
And by the way, I know the other guy that's like Joe in Hollywood. That's Rosie O'Donnell. So they're totally balls to the wall.
If we could put Continue Together with Rosie, I'm in. Frankly, you wouldn't begrudge me that one iota.
No, she would.
She would have no problem sitting in the sushi bar for hours on end, I'm sure.
Wow. Not at all. And Janet Baksaki and beer would be fantastic. She had her hands taped up. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
All right.
Hold on, guys. Hold on. I'm just going to throw up in my mouth. Hold on.
Wait. And there.
Now, Joe, just for our listeners and just so you can clear up all the internet rumors, can you explain to everybody what happened with Daredevil?
Guys, it's real simple. What happened with Daredevil was, you know, they got to me late. They had a script. That a very talented guy, David Kelly, who's not the David Kelly of Boston Legal and Ally McNeil or whatever the hell that show was, another David Kelly, very talented guy, who wrote a really good script. But my problem was that it was a contemporary telling of that script, and I didn't think it was appropriate. I thought it would be really cool to do a Daredevil, to set a superhero film as they did with X-Men as a period film. In the 70s, when Hell's Kitchen was really Hell's Kitchen, and you had the Westies and Mickey Featherstone and Roy DeMeo and these guys kind of, you know, running around Hell's Kitchen, causing all kinds of trouble and inciting all types of chaos. So I thought that would be cool to do that. I prepared a pitch that reflected that. We saw the reel that we did that met with a great deal of success, I think, or enthusiasm on the internet. And what we simply did was we just ran out of time. We couldn't have possibly rolled cameras on October 9th. And I didn't realize I think we all thought that Marvel would grant that extension. And Marvel and being smart about their business practices and wanting all the characters reunited under one roof, chose not to. I don't begrudge it. I think Feige, Kevin's a really smart guy, and I like him quite a bit, and I think he really digs the pitch, and who knows, man.
Are you comfortable,
life after death.
Joe, are you comfortable giving your thoughts on who you think would make a great Matt Murdock?
You know what? Honestly, Matt, I never got to that point. I never reached the point where I thought, that could be any one actor. I think it was... I think I was more concerning myself with trying to put together, because I always had this idea of doing, it was like Daredevil 73, Daredevil 79, and then Daredevil 85.
Wow.
So that was going to be my, that was going to be the thing, and it was going to be a trilogy. Hmm. And I had what I thought was a pretty compelling, with Mark Millar's help, a pretty compelling kind of take. And Mark was doing it as a buddy of mine, but I was using him as a sounding board. And of course, that guy's, I think he's a genius. And
he's a fucking talent.
He's this generation Stan Lee. And,
why did he get no credit? Friend. Why did he get no credit for the Avengers, Joe? Mark?
Listen, I think he did that as work for hire, man. And I think, and I'm hoping that, the powers that be at Marvel kind of take care of him, because all that stuff originated with him. But Mark, being a really upstanding, fine, polite Scottish lad, didn't push the issue. And I also think Mark takes great pride in being kind of endlessly creative, and I think he would have felt it was petulant to just sit on ceremony and say, kind of demand to be paid. I think, as he says, like right now, like Secret Service and Superior outselling, some big Marvel titles like Spider-Man. So I don't think, Mark's crying all the way to the bank right now. He's not resting on his laurels, and that's just, that's the personality he is, and he's become a wonderful friend and a great kind of collaborative, that you could do worse than to bounce ideas off of him. As he did with us recently, it was a couple of us that he ran, Kick-Ass 3 by, and we kind of counseled them and gave him whatever advice we thought was, prudent and necessary, and he reciprocates. He's a great guy.
Well, with all the jokes we made today, Matt Murdock's going to be Chris Pine,
Yeah.
Yeah,
we talk about it enough, it's going to happen.
Or Ryan Reynolds.
Again, Pauly Shore, looking for a moment, looking for a window, get back into it.
And Joe, since Bruce Fretz is on from TV Guide, why don't you explain to Bruce about your pilot you're doing with Brian Grazer at A&E?
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I want to hear about that.
What A&E? How come I'm not in this?
Frank, I asked you. You said you're busy. What are you talking about?
All right. Okay. Oh, that pilot.
Oh, that pilot.
This is exactly my conversation with Frank. Frank, you want to just say anything? Hey, bro, I've got a flourishing fucking film career. And he hangs up. That was it. That's all I heard.
Wait. So
film career, dick, and then click. That's what I heard. No, Bruce, it's for A&E and for Fox 21. It's for Imagine, for Brian Grazer, and for Fox 21. And it's... I think it's an incredibly cool. Glenn Morgan, who's a really talented guy, did a really unique kind of take on the whole serial killer genre, and I'm loath to kind of go down that road, but I thought it was so well written and imaginative and smart that I thought, oh, what the hell? And like everybody else, I want some of that TV money, baby. So I jumped in, and I'm excited. We start shooting, I think October 9th, and I can't tell you a cast, I can't tell you any details, but I'm really excited about it.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Thanks.
So let me get this straight. This is a show for A&E, and it's not about rednecks doing redneck jobs. It's not a reality show.
No, not the script I read. Now, Steven Seagal will show up and nut shot somebody, but we don't know when that's going to be. We could save that for the season finale. We're not sure, but he will punch the nutsack off someone. We just don't know.
Well,
if
look,
it's going to be a cop or a serial killer.
Look for Bruce Fretz, who's at TV Guide. You're on the phone, Bruce, and you gave the great review. And I'm expecting Bruce now. Joe's going to be looking now for you on this pilot. He's going to be seeing what kind of review you give it. You're on the line
well,
here,
Joe's
pal.
Good. I mean, I love Glenn Morgan. He did some great X-Files episodes back in the day. So
absolutely,
that's,
man. Absolutely.
Very promising.
Yeah.
Very promising.
You know, I don't know. I might be speaking out of line, but Joe and I are also, we're developing a series for, I think, NBC. It's Evil Knievel. It's reimagined. It's in a pickup truck instead of a motorcycle. Anyway,
it's actually called Evel Knievel. Frankly, it's Evel Knievel the later years, and it's just going to be Evel Knievel on a backboard and Tom Kane and taking Vicodin, and he just has dreams, and that's what we go with. These dreams and nightmares.
You know what?
And that's what we concern ourselves with.
I would totally watch that show.
And, I think NBC will pick it up. He put a monkey in it, so.
Well, yeah. If you put a gay couple in it and a monkey, NBC will pick it up.
Yeah,
and a former star of Friends.
We're gonna use all the old sets in the Playboy Club that are still hanging out, and blow the dust off those fuckers and use those.
Well, Frank, I know you gotta go to your rehearsal. Frank Grillo,
yes.
At Frank Grillo on Twitter, but Frank Grillo and to watch this weekend. I hope to speak to you soon, sir. Joe, I'll be seeing you in a few weeks.
Hey.
I'm very excited about what we're doing. I really appreciate everything, Joe. I just want to tell you this, Joe, because I don't tell you it enough. I really appreciate everything you're doing for me, and I think this is going to be great.
That's good. You're going to make me cry, man. What's wrong with you, dude?
Nah, I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you.
It's like I got to deal with enough abuse from this guy. I don't need this.
All right,
Joe, are you coming to L.A.?
Yes, bro. Yes.
When?
We'll be there, by the way. We'll be there. If I miss you, I'm going to be there for the 27th for the SAG thing, so...
All right, I'll see you then.
And
yeah.
By the way,
the
three of us need to get together, smoke some Monte Cristos in honor of Tony Scott.
Absolutely. That'd be wonderful.
That's it.
Yeah,
okay.
We're going to do that. I will talk to you guys soon. We have Nick Searcy coming on from Justified in a minute. Joe, Frank, thank you so much. Bruce, thank you.
Thank you, fellas.
Thanks, guys.
You got it, man. All right, you guys be good.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'll talk soon,
bye-bye,
bro.
Yeah.
All right. Bruce, you still there?
I'm still here.
All right, you hang on for a moment. So... I taped my interview with Nick Searcy, but is there anything you want to say about Justified before I play it?
Well, I'm curious to hear if you got into the Herman Cain thing with Nick Searcy. Did you bring that up?
There is I didn't bring up Herman Cain, but there is we talk about what that was all about. We talk about Mitt Romney quite a bit. So
good. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
So you will definitely hear about that.
Good. I love Nick on Justified, and
he's great.
He's a great actor, Nick.
Yeah.
He's a
they
great
need
actor.
Even more though, because
makes
so much out of so little on that show.
Well, we talked about that as well, and he reveals a small tidbit about what's going to happen with his character. His character's going to go through
good.
A good character arc this year. Oh, by the way, while I have you on the line, Sons of Anarchy. What did you think of the premiere? What do you think of the season so far?
I'm liking it so far. I love Smits. I love
Harold. Smits is great on there. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about Ashley Tisdale and Joel McHale down the line later this season. We'll
see. Me too.
But it could go either way. It could go
Hasselhoff. Yeah. You're on good terms.
It could go Stephen King, which didn't. So,
You're on good terms with Kurt Suter right now. You're not a cunt at the moment, right?
I am officially not. Yes. I've declared officially not on Twitter. So
very.
So yeah, try not to piss him off.
Well, he won't do my show. So until he does my show, I'm not going to call him a C word, but I'm going to call him a B. He's a B.
All right.
Let me ask you about other fall shows real quick. Instead of just going through a list, give me three shows we should be watching this fall.
Yeah.
New shows, there are only three worth watching, actually, pretty much.
Okay, perfect.
Vegas is good. So if you play Buddy Dennis Quaid and Michael Chiklis on CBS. I like Last Resort with our pal Andre Brower on ABC, the submarine drama. And I like, you may not go with me on this one, but I like the Mindy Project on Fox. I like Mindy Kaling.
Okay, here's the thing. I'm starting to lighten up on that. You were right about Chris Messina. I got over my hatred for him. I didn't hate him.
He's okay.
I got over my blah for him. I was just kind of like, for me, it was blah. And I saw season 4 Damages and season 5, And they didn't really give him much to do in season five. And by the way, let's talk about that.
He was good, though.
Yeah, he was. He got better as it progressed to the point where he was very good at the end. But let's talk about season five of Damages. Of course, Damages just ended. Lee, you may need to do some earmuffs here for a moment.
I only finished season three.
Okay, but Bruce, I think we can agree while the show was good in season four and season five, they probably should have ended after season three, huh?
I don't know if I would say that. I thought season four and season five were solid. I thought they should.
No,
have
I thought they were solid
the
too.
Finale.
I thought they were solid too, but I thought the last peak was season three, the last high note.
Yeah, four and five weren't as good as three, but you know there were some great moments. There were some great performances.
The airport
and,
scene. The airport scene's phenomenal.
You know, just to give Judd Hirsch work for 2 years. You know,
that's true.
Worth it, I think.
That's true. It was worth watching Judd Hirsch.
You gotta love Judd Hirsch.
Yeah, I agree with you there. The last 2 years, I do like the airport scene in season five. That's a great episode, and I thought the series finale.
That was my least favorite episode. I hated the airport.
Really? Oh, see, Ken Homelin, I loved it. Why did you hate it, though?
No.
Maybe you have a good reason.
I just thought it was wasting time. I just thought it was like a time killer. It was like, oh, we gotta spin out another hour here. All right, let's get him stuck in an airport. It was just like, you know, what is this, an off-Broadway play all of a sudden? Get back to the story. You know?
And then you know, what did you think of the series finale? Because I was afraid of certain things. Put it this way, I think everyone kind of wins in the end of that show, or loses.
Well, that was my problem. I thought they should have ended it 5 minutes earlier. I thought they should have ended
it. I did, too. I didn't like the tacked-on ending.
Burn, you know, realizing that she's become just as much of a horrible person as Glenn Close was, but then they kind of let her off the hook in the end.
I didn't like the tacked-on ending.
Forward.
Okay, and then give me three shows that you like that are returning to television this fall. I'm sure one is Boardwalk Empire.
I love Boardwalk Empire.
I love it.
I do.
Charles, tell them what you think of Boardwalk
Empire. I like
the
opener. So far, looks good.
Let's see what Charles has to say about Boardwalk.
I thought the first season of Boardwalk Empire was okay, and as the second season progressed, I got more and more bored with
boring!
It.
Boring!
Didn't like the end.
I don't understand people say that. I hear that a lot, and I'm just riveted by
is
the
it,
show. I mean,
Fred,
I feel like the cast is so good.
Yes.
The story moves a little bit slow, but I mean, it's like...
But
it's so
I'm to the point where I can
too.
Care
I mean,
less
a...
about Steve Buscemi and his wife's last Irish girlfriend or whatever. I could just care less. I don't
it's
want to see
Sopranos.
That.
Not Sopranos.
I'll tell you something.
I don't want to
see I'll tell you something,
story.
Bruce. Is it me or I don't think that show moves too slow. I think most shows move too fast. You know, most shows.
I agree with you on that.
It gets a call, cut to the thing, everybody, I mean, it's, I like that pacing. I like that on the show. And is it just really hard, even after all this time and people are so much more experienced with television now, and there's so many good shows that people still can't get into something because it takes place so many years ago?
That might be part of it. I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, people do also compare it so closely to The Sopranos, and there's a lot of comparisons to be made, but, you know. I mean, if you want everything to be The Sopranos, you're always going to be disappointed, you know? I mean,
right.
It's
yes, I will always be disappointed because I expect more out of my television, Bruce. All right, what's the other two returning shows that are worth watching? And then give me what is the worst new show of the year.
All right. Other returning shows worth watching, I just watched the second season of Homeland on Showtime, which is not a show that I'm quite as over the moon as some critics are, but I think is a very solid show and looks like it's off to a good start for... season two, and what else is coming back?
Treme is coming back, isn't it?
First couple episodes of Dexter are pretty good, too.
I was just going to ask that. The way Dexter
they moved
ended.
The story forward, you know, with the whole finale last year and his sister discovering him, and they don't wimp out on that. They follow through with it. It's not like a
she should have
you know,
found
a dream
out
or like, you know. Something that he just kind of explains away. Like, they really deal with the implications of that.
Yeah,
so,
I got to be honest, too, Bruce. Chuck told me about it. I stopped watching two seasons ago, and Chuck made a good point.
Yeah.
She should have found out, like, years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like a sticking point with me with that show, where it's just like,
and I can
come
get,
on.
I can get behind that, and I can get by after the fourth season.
Especially
the John Lithgow
season
was so good.
Right, but especially the season finale, where him and Julia Stiles kill that dude, and she shows up there.
Right.
I mean, like, come on.
Right.
How did he escape that? No fucking way.
Right.
His car's there. Destroyed.
I know.
Oh, drives me nuts. Okay, and then what about Treme?
Treme's coming back, isn't
Treme's
it?
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, Treme's good. I've seen the first couple new episodes. I mean, it's Treme. It's like, if you liked it before, you're going to like it again. If you didn't like it, which a lot of people didn't, because, you know, it's not The Wire. Again, it's kind of the same thing as Boardwalk Empire. You know, everyone compares or Walk to the Sopranos, everyone compares Tremaine to The Wire.
Okay.
Well, it's not going to be as good as The Wire because The Wire was the best show ever in the history of television. Get over it.
You
know?
Right.
I mean, it's still a great show. It's still a great cast. There's still a lot of great atmosphere, a lot of great music. It's not story-driven. You know, if you want that, then go watch something else. But
I just
if you just like great actors doing interesting scenes with good dialogue and great music, you know, what's to complain about?
And then, Bruce, worst show of the year?
Animal Practice. Absolutely.
That bad, huh? That bad.
Oh, God. It's bad. You know, it's like Justin Kirk. I don't know what that guy thinks when he wakes up in the morning, but he just keeps getting cast as an asshole.
He looks into the mirror and goes, I'm not Frank Grillo. That's what he does.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Joanna Garcia Swisher, come on.
I thought
please.
Weeds was
enough
awful at the second or after the second or third season. I thought Weeds was awful, and I thought he was terrible on Weeds.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
you know, it's like it's monkey abuse, basically, as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's like the monkey is the best actor on the show.
And then I want to talk about your article today that you posted on fretsonfilm.com. Fretsonfilm.com. Yeah, speaking of monkeys and your dismal review of Ed, you rated the top five and worst five baseball movies, and I got to tell you, around these parts, you stirred up some controversy.
I know I would.
I mean, everyone was attacking.
If I'd done top ten, I would have included all those movies that everyone was complaining about. I would have put The Natural in there. I would have put Major League. I would have put League of Their Own. But, you know, I made a few offbeat choices. You know, Bingo Long Term and All-Stars and Motor Kings is not a movie that people remember, but it's a great movie. You should go back and watch it.
Where was Rookie of the Year? Where was Little Big League?
Those are kids' movies. Come on. Those aren't serious movies.
I enjoyed them. I think Dennis Farina took it very seriously.
Yeah.
I was an adult when they came
out. Angels in the Outfield.
No,
I don't think Dennis Farina would refer to it as a kids' movie.
I actually still watch both those movies now and enjoy them. But I'm also the guy that enjoyed Just Go With It, which Bruce will never let me live down. So
I wouldn't let you live that down either.
I thought it was good.
Okay.
Bruce, Matt also loves good. To quote Angels in the Outfield because Tony Danza.
Yeah, where was Angels in the Outfield?
I
haven't seen this list.
Not anywhere near the list.
Are you
closer to the worst than the best?
Are you Mel
Clark?
On there? I used to be. That's my Tony Danza. I used to be.
That's just Stallone, really.
All right. Fretsonfilm.com. Go check it out there. What's your Twitter handles, Bruce? Because you have so many of them.
just go with Bruce Frett, B-R-U-C-E-F-R-E-T-T-S at Twitter.com. There you go.
Okay, and the Sundance blog, plug that for tomorrow. It's going to be up in the afternoon.
Tomorrow the Death Wish post is going up tomorrow. It's SundanceChannel.com, and then the blog is Sunfiltered. It's their culture blog. So you can click on either film or politics, and you'll find my blog about W from last week and Death Wish from this week, and then it'll be coming up every week after that.
All right, and now we're going to go to our interview. Bruce, thank you for joining me. It's great that you finally had some time to call in. You know,
I'm sorry it's been so long, but it's fun.
Well, I hope you had fun with Joe and Frank, too. I hope that was a good time
for
you. I mean,
that was great.
It felt like we were in a rowdy bar, but yes. But no,
right, I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I'll talk to you soon. And fretsonfilm.com. And now we're going to go to my interview I did with Nick Searcy. And I am very happy about this interview. And to be honest with you, I think it's one of the best interviews we've done on this show. Because Nick and I talk about everything from his roles to his political beliefs to pro wrestling to we're all over the board on this one here. And I think you're going to be really entertained by it. We're going to go into overtime because the guys are going to come back. We're going to have Chuck Lee, Mikey Terzo's around somewhere. He disappeared into a bathroom.
Him
with
and Lenny
and
are in the bathroom.
They're in the bathroom together.
There is a three-way with
which means either Luisi brought an eight ball.
No.
Or
doubt that.
Okay.
Couldn't afford one. Maybe a two ball.
Yeah, right.
Maybe a two ball, possibly a three ball.
Or it's the biggest bowl of, like, Chinese.
Or they're rubbing Chinese Lenny's game. Cue ball. One of the two. To keep the ball metaphors going.
Something.
Do you hear that slurping noise? Is that a slurp? All right, so here's my interview with Nick Searcy. If you want to listen to Overtime, download us on iTunes or go to Blog Talk Radio to the Matthew Aaron Show. We'll post the link on the Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook. You can like us there, but you can listen to it either on Blog Talk or iTunes. Of course, iTunes, I also encourage, because you could subscribe and you can catch up on all our episodes. Of course, go to the MatthewAaronShow.com, where you can just click on any show you want to listen to, and they're all there. So the MatthewAaronShow.com is the place to be. Yeah, right. Okay, so anyways, here's my interview with Nick Searcy from Justified. Fantastic actor. We'll be back after this. All right, welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am going to be sitting down here on the phone with a personal favorite character actor of mine. I always love when I have actors on that I will watch anything they're in. And such an eclectic amount of work from Nick Searcy here. And, of course, my favorite show on television right now, toss-up between The Good Wife and Justified. And Justified is what a great show. What a great show. And, Nick, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here with you. And just to clarify, I'm actually a leading man. I just happen to be trapped in a character actor's body.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, you stand out like a leading man, though. And the first thing I remember seeing you in, now, I do want to get to one of your earliest credits where, you know, you didn't have a huge role, but it's relevant to what's going on today. But I wanted to talk about Fried Green Tomatoes. I mean,
Yeah. First
of all, you play a bastard in that movie. And I got to tell you, yeah. I'm watching that movie, and I'm always blown away by, you know, there's certain guys out there that play bad guys real well, like David Morse and Chris Walken and certain guys that play the bad guys well. But I've gotten to know you, following you on Facebook and talking to you here and there. And you're a real sweet guy. How do you play a role like Frank Bennett?
Well, you know, it's funny, when I was working on that role, and that was one of the first. It's actually the first role I had in a film that had more than one scene to it. but when I was working on the role, you know, Jessica Tandy was in that movie, and we didn't have any scenes together, but I got to meet her.
Yeah.
And we were talking about it just on, you know, we happened to be riding together on this little bus. And she said, "Oh, and who do you play?" And I said, "I'm playing Frank Bennett." And she said, "Oh, you're the bad guy." I said, "Well, I kind of think of, I don't think he's that bad. I kind of think I've got a point." she said, "Well, that's exactly the way you have to play it, my dear. You know, you kind of have to play the bad guys like they're right, because they think they're right."
Right.
I mean, they think they're doing the right thing. You know, it's like, my wife needs to be corrected. She's not behaving properly, so I'm doing the right thing by hitting her. You know, that's kind of the way I try to play it.
Yeah, I've always been fascinated with bad guy work, because in every short or every play I've done, I've never played the bad guy. And I've always just wondered, and I think that's the best explanation I've had. And David Morse had a similar one. And it's just, yeah, you have to believe they're in the right. That's a great answer.
Yeah, I mean, because the bad guys don't think they're bad.
No, no, they think they're doing the right thing. Now, let me ask you about one of your earliest roles. You and I could both say it wasn't a huge thing by any means, but you did get to work on Days of Thunder. And there was Tony Scott in that film, who directed the film. And do you remember meeting Tony and what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, Days of Thunder was my first film role. And Tony Scott really, you know, he gave it to me and gave me my start, kind of in a sense. But, yeah, I do remember I had, they shot that movie in North Carolina, and I had moved back from New York to North Carolina to be, you know, my wife was pregnant, and we just had to get out of New York City. It wasn't working out for us there. And this was one of the earliest auditions I had. I got a little agent in Charlotte, you know, on the reputation that I was this big highfalutin New York actor, when, of course, I'd been in New York for 7 years and, you know, waiting tables and driving limousines and stuff. But anyway, I got this audition, and I remember just being so nervous. For some reason, it was Tony Scott, you know, and you know, it was a real part. And I just remember being so nervous that my knees were shaking when I did the audition. And I did it, and I walked out of there, and I thought, well, that was terrible. There's no chance in hell, you know. And about 2 months later, it took a long time, but about 2 months later, they called me back and said, hey, you've got the part.
Wow.
So I went in and did it, you know, and it was great fun. I got to meet Tom Cruise and Robert Duvall on my first,
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Bobby Duvall's the best. He's the greatest.
Yeah.
So
the weirdest thing about Tony Scott was that I've auditioned for him two more times since then. And once, a long time ago for Crimson Tide and then something else. But every time I see Tony, I saw Tony Scott, I had the same experience. That's my knees would start shaking. Even after I'd like had my career going and there was really nothing to be nervous about, for some reason he scared me. I don't know what it was.
If you ended up in Crimson Tide, that movie would literally have had everybody. Everybody is in that movie. I was just curious because it's got to be really interesting when that's your first role working with Tony Scott. How'd you get involved in the business? When did you start acting? When did you know this is what you wanted to do? And what was the process like?
Well, I knew I wanted to do it when I was a kid, probably when I was 11 or 12. I knew, I have a vivid memory of just sort of sitting in my house watching the Mary Tyler Moore Show and thinking to myself, those guys look like they're having so much fun. I want to be one of those guys. But, of course, I was living in a small town in North Carolina then. So, after high school, I went to I just did a lot of plays. That's basically all I did. And went to North Carolina School of the Arts for acting for about 6 months and dropped out because I didn't know what they were talking about. And then I transferred to Chapel Hill, the University of North Carolina. I just did a lot of plays there. And then after I graduated, I moved to New York and just basically came up through the theater, as much as possible. That was pretty much all I did in New York for 7 years. And then never really got my career started until basically my wife and I decided to leave New York because we weren't really making enough money to be comfortable, and we had a baby on the way. So we moved back to North Carolina, and I was thinking of going back to school and getting a teaching degree or something. I just got this little agent in Charlotte, the Jan Thompson Agency in Charlotte, North Carolina, and speaking of that, in North Carolina, and I wound up getting little parts in Days of Thunder and Prince of Tides. A movie called Love Field and, little things that came through. And then when Fried Green Tomatoes came through, they read me for a small part, and John Avnet, the director, just out of the blue said, I want to read Nick for Frank, and handed me this big sheaf of material, and I was like, wow, this is like a real part.
Yeah.
And, that kind of was how it happened when I wound up getting Frank Bennett and Fried Green Tomatoes. That movie did really well, and it gave me enough of a profile so that I could at least explain to somebody who I was. I could call an agent in California and go, hey, did you see Fried Green Tomatoes? I'm the bad guy.
Yeah, I gotta believe Fried Green Tomatoes opened the floodgates for things like The Fugitive. Which, by the way, what a great experience that had to be. You and Tommy Lee Jones, mano a mano.
It was fun, although I don't think Tommy Lee liked me very much.
You don't? There's always that rumor he's a difficult guy, so maybe you just don't. You can never tell with him.
Well, it was pretty explicit. We had a little rehearsal beforehand, and Tommy Lee really rewrote that whole film. I mean, he basically changed every line in it. And so when we were doing the rehearsal for my character's scene, he didn't like the way I was doing it. He said, I don't like the way you're playing it. I think you should play the guys much more stupid and much more of a country bumpkin. You're kind of playing him too slick. And I said, well, I don't really see it that way. I think the guy's probably a pretty good politician, but he just is incompetent and doesn't know what he's doing. I think that's a more interesting choice. And the director kind of looked at both of us and went, well, Tommy Lee has a point.
Andrew Davis, yeah. you went with the star, yeah.
He wouldn't go against Tommy Lee, but I ended up saying, well, I don't really want to play it that way. And, boy, he didn't like me after that. He was mad at me.
That's funny. And then you did, of course, you worked with John Avnet again on The War.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Nell with Michael Apted. those were two pretty big profile movies for you as well.
Yeah, they were. It was Nell especially was it was a great film for me to do just because I was living in L.A. and they shot Nell about 50 miles from where I grew up in North Carolina. So it was really cool to get flown back home.
Yeah.
To work on that movie.
Yeah, that would be something that's really cool coming home.
Yeah, that was fun. And, you know, my mom and dad were extras in it. It was sort of,
wow.
You know, it was good to be, it felt like home, that movie.
Yeah, and I mean, working with Jodie Foster, she's amazing. She's a great actress.
Yeah, it really was. It was a lot of fun. And Liam Neeson is just a prince. I mean,
he's the coolest guy, right? He's the coolest guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Natasha Richardson was in that, too. That was quite a shock when she got taken away so suddenly. But, you know, they're a great couple, and really, Liam's a good buddy.
We're big fans of Liam here. We did weeks of promotion on The Gray. I think The Gray is some of his best work ever. I thought he was phenomenal in that movie.
Yeah, he is. He's a really, really great actor.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about American Gothic. I didn't watch too much of the show, but I do know a good friend of mine, Mike Binder, directed one of the episodes. Were you involved with that episode?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know Mike. I run into him from time to time.
He's a good guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Every time I run into him, I go, what, you don't like me? You never cast me in anything.
I talked to him about you a few weeks ago. He definitely likes you. So that's the good news. I got good news for you.
Good. Well, that series was great for me just because of all, not only because of the work, which I thought the writing was terrific. Sean Cassidy did a great job putting together that world, but also all the directors that I met on that show. I mean, I've run into them all over and over again. Oz Scott.
They were all working. They're all working guys.
Yeah. Mike Binder and Elodie Keen, all the directors from American Gothic have come back up in my life.
And you know what is wild for me is maybe Mike Binder hasn't cast you in a bunch of things, but Tom Hanks sure likes you. From the Earth to the Moon, and then, of course, also Castaway. Is there any coincidence that you were in Castaway after From the Earth to the Moon? And what's your experience like with Tom Hanks, who's my producer's favorite actor, like, ever?
Well, Tom was a terrific boss. I mean, had a great time on From the Earth to the Moon. And another situation where just some of the best directors in the world came through there, and, you know, getting to work with those guys and seeing them, you know, they've also come up again in my career. And then I think that probably it wasn't a direct correlation, me being in From the Earth to the Moon and me being in Castaway. I think that probably what happened was Robert Zemeckis, you know, I made a tape for Castaway, and Zemeckis liked it, and he asked Tom if he knew me, and Tom said, oh, sure, you know. So I think that's about really it. I don't think Tom suggested me or anything.
Well, it's always nice when you got two credits on Tom Cruise projects. That always works out well for people.
Yeah, I'd rather have three or four. But
now, let me ask you something though, Nick. I wanted to talk about Runaway Jury and a few other of your projects as well that I was big fans of. But I wanted to talk about politics for a moment, if you don't mind, because I know you're very vocal about it on Facebook, and to be honest with you, I think that's fantastic because. To be a Republican in Hollywood, it kind of seems like they're all in the closet if they are out there, and we don't know about it. And, you know, talk to me about that experience, being open politically. Does that hurt you on getting jobs or anything? What is the stigma out there?
Well, you know, it may hurt me getting jobs. If it did, I wouldn't know about it. You know, it's the kind of thing. They're not going to call you up and go, I'm not casting you because I hate your politics. They'll just go, I don't want to see that guy. So it's not something they're going to be straight with you about. So I have no way of knowing. I don't know if I don't work more because of my politics or if I don't work more because I'm just not very good. But I sort of decided, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, really, that I kind of woke up and realized that I really had never been quiet about my politics. I just didn't know it was such a big deal. that I wasn't really in the liberal Democrat pocket. You know, I had sort of always kind of talked to people about what I thought. You know, I can remember even getting in discussions on the set of Nell with people because I wasn't really a Clinton fan.
Yeah.
I just never really thought that it was a big deal. And I don't think it really was up until about around the George Bush years. I think that's really when things really got very galvanized and divided and personal.
Yeah. Yeah. And why is that? Why do you think that is?
You know, I have my own view about it, which I, you know, I'd say from the outset may be biased, but I don't think that people from the liberal side really want to debate conservatives. They want them to just go away and shut up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think they really want to talk about issues. They, you know, they kind of just want to go, well, you obviously don't care about the poor. And, you know, it gets personal right away. Instead of just saying, no, I care about the poor. I just don't think that the programs that the liberals have built are necessarily helping them. And here's why I think that. That's not really what they want to do. They don't want to talk about that. And granted, like I said, that may just be my bias because I'm a conservative.
No, I understand. I understand that, yeah.
Yeah, and I also think that the election of George W. Bush really infuriated them from the beginning. I think that, you know, they really, the election was such a contested and it took months and the Supreme Court decisions and all that and the Electoral College. I think it really infuriated a lot of liberals who didn't think that was fair, and that emboldened them and made them more resentful. And, you know, and then it just, yeah, I think it feeds on itself. You know, I think it goes back and forth. I'm certainly more resentful now than I was 12 years ago. So,
Is it fair?
Yeah. One more point. I mean, Andrew Breitbart was a friend of mine. Andrew Breitbart.
Yeah.
You know, it inspired me a lot. And there were times when he was alive that he asked me to do things that, you know, some of them I did, but some of them I thought, well, I don't know, maybe that's not really a good idea for me to do that because, you know, I've got a kid in college, and I have bills that I have to pay and all that kind of thing. And then after he passed away, I just sort of went, you know, what am I waiting for? You know, how much time do I have left anyway? I'm not going to sit around and not be who I am and not say what I think.
I do want to put out there, I have friends that were also friends with Andrew, and I want to put out there, everything I've ever heard about the guy was that he was a fantastic human being and a great friend and really fun to be around.
Just a really exuberant fellow and just a hilarious guy. I mean,
yeah.
Most of the time when I was talking to Andrew, I was laughing most of the time. He was really, really funny. And he was a connector. He brought people together. If you know, he put me in touch with, you know, Larry Schweikart, the guy who wrote Patriot's History of the United States, and because he knew that I was interested in, you know, working up a documentary of that. And so, you know, that project is ongoing. It's going to happen, and that's, you know, that's kind of what he did for a lot of people. He brought people together that he knew needed to be connected.
Well, I think it's important to put out stories like that, too, about Andrew being a great guy, because I know I have a lot of liberals that listen to the show, and, you know, I just feel like, come on, it's fine to disagree on politics, but to hate people because of politics, I really think that's the worst thing that people can do. I think, and I've seen a lot of my liberal friends do it, and my Republican friends, but I've seen my liberal friends do it a lot this year, where it's, they'll delete people on Facebook that are Republican, they'll say they hate them, and they don't want to talk to them ever again. It's getting nasty, and I'm getting a little sick of it.
Yeah, and you know, the things that were said about Breitbart when he passed away by certain people were, you know, pretty bad. Pretty vicious and pretty hard to forgive. And, that's on them, though. I mean, that says more about them than it does about Andrew or anything else.
Well, I I'm very sorry that happened to you, Nick. But I'm glad that you can carry on in some way or form Andrew's legacy. That's a great tribute to him.
Yeah, I hope to do that. And I know a lot of his other friends out here, and we all kind of share that. We sort of want to
now,
do some of the work that Andrew started.
Let me ask you this. When I read the reports about Republicans in the industry giving money to Mitt Romney's campaign, your name is like the only name people mention. There's got to be more Republicans in Hollywood. Are they just hiding out or what?
I can't tell you. I don't know. Maybe they're giving through some other, foundations or something that's not personal. Maybe they're smarter than me.
Right. But you have friends out there that are in the business. They're Republican, right? It's not just a liberal place.
Yeah. No, I have quite a few, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's a lot of that's, thanks to Andrew Breitbart brought a lot of us together.
I just feel bad because, I feel like we can't talk about certain people's politics and stuff because I never know if you're outing them or not. It's like I feel so weird that it seems like an issue in Hollywood that somebody is conservative. It drives me nuts.
It is, and it's totally backwards. I mean, it's like the liberals are supposed to be the tolerant ones. They're supposed to be the ones for free speech, right? Freedom of thought.
Right.
Freedom of religion. All that stuff, and it's like, yeah, it is. It is backwards that we have to be concerned about whether you can tell somebody that somebody else is a conservative. It's like, it literally is like being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You don't want anybody to know, so you can't tell somebody that somebody else is an alcoholic.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with being a conservative in Hollywood.
Well, as people heard on my show, and this is something I believe in, when it comes to your politics, when it comes to your sexuality, whatever, but I was very open about my alcoholism, and I've been in AA 11 months now, and you got to reach out, and you got to talk about these things. These are the only way these things are not going to become taboo anymore, is if people are open about them and talk about them.
Right.
So I just think that's fair.
I'd like to start this meeting by saying my name is Nick, and I'm a conservative.
Hey, let me ask you one more question on the political spectrum. What are some of the facts out there, facts in your mind, not in your mind the facts, but facts that you've read about that Democrats and liberals are ignoring about this administration and this election?
Well, the unemployment number is, even as high as it is artificially low because of the way it's calculated, which, they don't count the people that have given up looking for work. So the economy is actually much worse than is even being reported. I think that they want to, for whatever reason, ignoring the devastating impact of having more and more and more people on food stamps and public assistance. There's a sought to statistic yesterday that the middle class is shrinking and people are instead of moving up, people are falling down into the lower income classes, that a lot of the sort of attitude of this president towards industry has resulted in fewer private sector jobs. And, as a result, when you have fewer private sector jobs and the private sector is not doing well, there is less revenue flowing to the government to fund the overflowing programs that he continues to fund and push. And it's just, I just think that they are ignoring the coming economic collapse. You cannot continue to spend the way he's spending.
Yeah.
Deficit spending and expect our economy to do well. It's just not.
And what leads you to believe in your mind that Mitt Romney's the guy to turn it around?
Well, number one, he's the only choice. There's only one chance. We know what Obama's been like. We know what life is like under him. So he's the alternative. I don't know for sure exactly what Mitt Romney's going to do. Just like we didn't know for sure what Obama was going to do when we elected him. But I like what he has to say about business. And I like the fact that he's a successful businessman, that he's in, has over and over throughout his career gone in and turned businesses around and taken failing businesses and helped make them profitable. And I think that's the approach that we need. You know, at a certain point, you can talk about feelings and being a, and doing good for the poor and all these things that, that liberals like to talk about. But if you go bankrupt, you can't do good for anybody.
Right.
If you drive away all of the sources for tax dollars by discouraging business and discouraging employment, you're not going to be able to help anybody. And I think at this point we need some just hard, cold looks at the numbers and somebody in there who's going to try to make the ledger balance. And I think that Mitt Romney at least has a chance of being able to do that. I don't think Barack Obama does.
And would it be fair to say the economy is such a number one issue with a bullet in this election that you worry less about some of the other social issues people are complaining about and such because we need a stable economy?
I certainly hope so. I think that a lot of the social issues are basically like junk food that, you know, I think the Democrats are throwing out there. Because basically what the philosophy seems to be of the Democrat campaign so far is to just vilify the right and say, they hate you, they're against gays, they're against women, they hate poor people, they're all evil rich people, and it's just basically demonize the right when, you know, none of that is true.
Are you an evil rich man, Nick? Are you an evil rich guy?
Well, I'm evil.
So you're not the island of Dr. Moreau. You don't have your own island, and you're doing
right.
experiments on people.
I've got the evil part. Just as soon as I get enough money, I'll be an evil rich guy.
All right, let's get back to the movies for a minute. Runaway Jury, I want to ask you about this because this is something I've ran across a bunch of times. I'm a Chicago guy, and yes, I live out in L.A. Now I am in Chicago at the moment. But we've had guests on the show before that have had very mixed experiences, and I shouldn't even say mixed, bad experiences working with John Cusack. Was that the same for you or no?
No, I had fun with John.
You did?
Yeah, we did. You know, I don't know if you remember the movie that well, but there's a big, long foot chase scene between John and I.
Yep, I do remember that.
John's chasing me down the street, and the thing took about 3 days, I guess, to shoot, and I was so sore. I mean, it was just, I think I pulled every muscle in the lower half of my body on about the second take of running down the street, and I was just eating Advil like candy for 2 days. But John had a friend with him, or an assistant, I don't know exactly what he was, but he was just throw the football around with his friend between takes. And I said to John, one time I went over to John and I said, we need to do a football take. He said, what do you mean? I said, I'll run around the corner with my toolbox, just like we're doing the scene, and you come around the corner after me, but you have the football, and I'll drop the toolbox, and you hit me with a bomb. And we did it. We didn't tell Gary Fletcher, who's a great guy and a lot of fun. He laid it right in my arm. He's a pretty good passer. We completed the pass on camera.
That's funny. And Gary was a great director. I mean, I really like that film. I think it's a really good film.
I do, too. I was surprised that it didn't do better than it did at the box office.
Me, too.
You know, Gene Hackman, Dustin Hoffman, you know.
Yeah,
I
absolutely agree with you. You know, I wanted to backtrack a little bit to One Hour Photo. What a great independent film that is.
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you, especially working with Robin as the bad guy?
Yeah, I was really only there one day, but it was a long day, and, you know, got to spend quite a bit of time around Robin, who was just the most gracious man, star that I really have been around. He's a really, really wonderful guy.
Yeah, but, I've heard that. He's supposed to be a great guy.
Mark Romanek, the guy who directed it,
yep.
he was really, just from the time that I was there, he was really careful with Robin. He was on him all the time, you know, just to make sure that he didn't do any of his
shtick.
Kind of his old shtick. And it's like, you know, and in that movie, he plays it totally straight, and it's very creepy.
Okay.
But the funny thing is that every so often during the course of the day, Robin, they would just have to turn the camera off and just let Robin go. He would just, like, have to explode for about 3 or 4 or 5 minutes, you know, and just do his riffs and just start making jokes and do his thing, and then he'd get it all out of his system, and they'd shoot. It was kind of like it would just percolate up in him, and he just had to get rid of it.
What I was going to also talk to you about is, before we get to Justified here in the upcoming season, which I'm on the edge of my seat about, Moneyball, okay, that was so cool to see you in that movie, by the way. But it's you and Glenn Morshower, and then they're like real scouts in that scene. And then there's Brad Pitt. Now, you play one of the guys that's kind of telling, you know, kind of acting like Billy Bean's out of his mind. What was the Bennett Miller's direction to you about this character? What did you guys talk about with this character?
Well, you know, a lot of what happened in that shooting of those scenes, even though it's probably about a minute and a half or 2 minutes, took a long time to shoot those scenes. Because Bennett kind of threw the script out and said, I don't want to use any of this. I want you guys to just make it up. And we just kind of built the scene from scratch, which was difficult in a way because, you know, you got 5 or 6 actors in there like me, who are, you know, good actors, and we don't really know much about baseball, or maybe some of us do. I don't.
No, Glenn did. I know Glenn doesn't.
Yeah. And then you got, you know, these real scouts, and they know a lot of them. They can spew facts all day long. It's just they can't act.
Right. Well, I do know. I do know Glenn Morshower did a lot of research on this, and I know Brad thought Glenn was a scout actually.
Oh yeah.
And Glenn's like, yeah. No, Brad, I'm an actor. And did you do a lot of research for that role?
Well, I read the book. That's mostly what I did.
So that gives you a real good idea, though. I mean, the book I've read as well, and it's very detailed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more of a basketball fan, but I've been a casual baseball fan over the years, so I know a little bit about it. But, you know, the book was really just most of the source of my research about that.
Now,
and actually, the line that I say, there's really only one line that I have in the movie that is visible that I say on camera, and that's, he's got an ugly girlfriend, that means he's got no confidence, which is actually a line that was in the book.
That's funny. That's a line that was written in the script. Was there any improv involved with that movie at all, or those scenes?
Almost all of it. Almost all of it was improv.
That's great, yeah.
I think the girlfriend line got taken out at one point, and I put it back in because I'd read it in the book. You know, I just threw it.
That's great because I'm watching that, and as a guy who went to Second City, I could tell you guys were improv-ing, but in a good way, like where it was like, oh, this is real fresh. It doesn't sound written and forced. You can get that feeling from it. It was good.
Yeah, and if you watch the whole movie, I think the whole movie kind of has that freshness to it.
Yeah.
I think Bennett did a really good job of making that movie look like it was, you were capturing something secretly or something. You know, it doesn't look staged.
Between you and me and a ton of listeners, Nick, the first time I saw it, I was not a huge fan. And, like, I stepped back and I'm like, yeah, it was all right. I've now watched the movie like 10 times.
Yeah.
Like, no joke. I've watched it like 10 times. It grew on me. It's a really breeze. It's a breeze to get through, even though it's a longer movie. It's a breeze, and it's really fascinating. And Brad Pitt he's electric in that movie. Every scene he's in, just electric.
Yeah, it's a great film. I'm glad I was in it.
Now let's talk about who has to be your favorite person on the planet, Graham Yost, because what a great role on Justified. I mean. Elmore Leonard is one of the greatest writers in American history, if you ask me. And I mean that. From the bottom of my heart, I mean that. And this is a great, great show, Justified. It is one of those shows where I heard about it in the second season. Bruce Fretz from TV Guide was really trying to get me to watch it for a long time. I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it, Bruce. I'll get to it. And I went through the first two seasons in like a day, in 2 days. I watched them all. It was just so, it's such a great show. How did you get involved with the show? And then I wanted to talk about what kind of character arcs we can expect for at least your character in the future.
Right. Well, Graham was actually a supervising producer on From the Earth to the Moon. So I had known Graham since then. He had directed an episode, and, you know, Graham's got a great sense of humor, and we just sort of hit it off. And then Graham went on to do all this other stuff, and for 15 years I sent him emails going, I thought you liked me. What? I thought we were friends. You're doing all this stuff, and you never cast me, ever? You never think of me? And so finally I think, you know, I wore him down. But when my agents called me up and said, you know, there's this Elmore Leonard project that Graham Yost is putting together, and there's a character there that really seems to have your name written all over it. I said, well, that one's mine. And Graham actually, after it worked out that I did get the role, he kind of told me he had me in mind for it from the beginning, which was nice.
Well, you are perfect in the role. I mean, that role looks like it was tailored for you.
It does. I'm trying to get him to quit making me change clothes when I come to the set. It's really annoying. You know, that's the only difference in me and art is the clothes.
And I got to tell you, I got to give you credit for how you play your character, because here's the thing, as Art Mullen, the character is, it could be written as like one of those yelling sheriffs to the underling like Timothy Oliphant, but you play it cool, and even when you're like mad at Timothy on the show, Raylan, even when you're mad at Raylan, you kind of like, you never yell, you never scream. You're just, it's a very well, sly, subtle written character, or you just pull it off that way.
Well, thanks. It is a well written character. They do let us ad lib quite a bit, which is fun. But, you know, in my experience, that's, generally speaking, that's the way people in that part of the country deal with each other, especially men, you know.
Yep.
They deal with each other in sarcasm and humor.
Yeah.
Not in confrontation most of the time, you know, and that's just, I think that's a regional trait, by and large, about Kentucky and other places in the South, so.
So are you with Kelsey Grammer, where you two aren't getting nominated for Emmys because you're conservatives?
Well, obviously in my case.
Obviously.
I wouldn't say that.
I got to say, though, I don't think Kelsey's crazy about that. I really don't.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, I think that it must, you know, it has to enter his mind, you know. And I'm sure there's some truth to it. I mean, as far as Justified goes, you know, it's like we didn't get nominated for much of anything in terms of the awards. And I think that it's because we're a Southern show.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
That's my take on it. I think that it's not a sexy enough show for some of the, you know, the people who decide these things, the people who vote for the awards. You know, they prefer the more urban stories.
I absolutely agree with you. 100% on that. I think it's a shame you guys don't get nominated more. It was great that Margo and Walton got nominated, and it's great that Margo won. But, you know, just not enough nominations for that show, and Timothy deserves a win. I mean, you and Timothy look like you have a blast on that show. You guys look like when you're off set, you might as well be just as good a friend.
Yeah, we giggle a lot. We do have a lot of fun, and we play jokes on each other, and it's a great set. In fact, all the Marshalls. I love Erica Tattle, and Jacob Pitts is a lot of fun too. I mean, it's really a fun cast, and it's a pleasure to go to work. And Oliphant is just, you know, he's a really good actor.
Yep.
But he's also just a good guy. He's a good man. I really like him.
He's fucking charming on that show. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I can see where he would have it easy with the women if he was a single man. He charmed the pants off him, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I will tell you this for all the women listening out there. You know, even though Timothy's a really good-looking guy, he's not a great kisser.
That's great.
It's very sloppy.
So is there going to be any big character arc for you this year? Is there anything we can expect? I know you can't talk too much about it.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing going on with art this year. You know, I mean, I don't really want to say what it is, but there is kind of a, you know, a longer term arc going with art, which I really like it a lot. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to play, and I think it's going to be very interesting. And you know, a lot of course, most of the show is still going to be about, you know, the adventures of Raylan and Boyd and
sure.
and all the criminality in Harlan and all that. But there's a very, I think this season, probably more than the first three, is going to focus on some of the marshals in the office a bit more than it has in the past. And there's a really interesting long-term storyline for art this year.
Well, that's good, because I got to tell you.
I'm going to be mysterious about it.
I got to tell you, I like when art gets involved a little more, like he's just not in the desk or in the room. I like when he's out on the prowl. I'm into that. I like it.
Yeah, I do too. I think it lends a great depth to the character and to the show. The episode last season where Art kind of beat up the guy to get the information, I think it was a really important episode, not in just in terms of the action for Art, but it also revealed why Art understands Raylan probably better than other bosses would. Because probably Art was a lot like Raylan when he was younger.
I'm looking forward to that. We're going to get to that screening in a few minutes, but I did want to bring up something. This is why you need to come back on when I'm in L.A. We got some wrestling talk we got to do.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, brother, you and I could do 2 hours on wrestling, and it'd be all over the wrestling websites. Everyone would be listening to it. Now, who is your favorite wrestler of all time?
Well, there's no question it's Ric Flair.
Absolutely. Woo!
Ric Flair is my hero. I've actually met him once. He signed an autograph for me. I'm totally a mark when it comes to wrestling.
Me too.
I'm totally a fan. You
know? Me too. Yeah.
And I love Ric Flair. I like Stone Cold too. I think in some ways he was a real he really changed wrestling, I think.
I agree with you.
But there's some other, there's whole episodes of wrestling that I could just go on and on about. Do you remember Billy and Chuck?
Absolutely. And the wedding?
Yeah, that was maybe my favorite thing that ever happened on wrestling. Just the whole Billy and Chuck thing I just thought was so hilarious.
It was a really funny storyline, that's for sure. And also
because they never really came out and said
that they were gay. Right. It was kind of like Lenny and Lodi in WCW. They had the same thing going on.
Right. And it was just, I love it when the camera would go in the back and they'd open some dressing room door and, you know, Billy would be stretching Chuck. You know, he'd have his legs over his head and they'd turn around and go, "What? You're stretching."
No, that was funny. I got to tell you, speaking of tag teams, all right, so who's your favorite tag team then? Because I like the Hollywood Blondes, but also the Midnight Express you really can't beat.
Yes, the Midnight Express and also the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah, they were great. They were great.
Yeah. Wow, tag teams, but also I think that probably my favorite, you know, group of all time is the Four Horsemen.
Yeah, oh, of course. That's an easy one. Well, if that's not your favorite group, you're not a wrestling fan in my mind.
That's right. I've still got friends that every time we see each other, we just hold up the big four.
Oh, yeah. I do it all the time. What to you is the ultimate Four Horsemen group? The original with Ole and JJ and all them?
You know, I went through all of it. I think it's got to be Tully.
Yep.
Tully, Arn,
yep.
Ric Flair,
yep.
And Yeah, the fourth one, it kind of floats in my mind. Sometimes it's Lex Luger.
Sometimes it's Barry Windham.
Sometimes it's Barry Windham. Yeah, I mean, that fourth one is, you know. And for a while there, wasn't it just J.J. Dillon? Wasn't he the fourth one?
Yeah, it was. Well, J.J. managed them for sure, yeah. And then they got that Japanese manager that one time. I forget his name. That was just bad when Rick sold out to the Japanese or whatever.
Yeah.
That wasn't the best time of Rick's career.
No.
But I really liked Barry Windham. Barry Windham was the guy for me because he looked like he could kick some ass.
Yeah. He was. You could buy him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I got to tell you, I wish they'd written the storylines better, but I really like the final group with Benoit, Malenko, Arn, Ric Flair, and Mongo. I thought that was a great group, actually.
Yeah. I liked, you know, that group, Chris Benoit and Guerrero and Malenko, when they
did the Radicals. WWE. The Radicals, yeah.
The Radicals, yeah. I liked that group, too.
Oh, no, that was great. It's a shame what happened with the whole Benoit situation, because he was a great wrestler. He really was.
Oh, yeah, horrible.
That was a terrible thing for the business, that's for sure.
It was. And Eddie Guerrero, too. I miss him. I loved all that Latina heat, so.
I didn't talk to you the last few weeks. Did you go to SummerSlam?
No, I didn't. I wound up getting to every year I just start bugging people and just try. And some years I come up with tickets and some years I don't, you know. But I use my extensive network connections to try to get wrestling tickets. That's what my agent is always on to me about. It's like, really? You really want to bother these people for wrestling tickets? Isn't there something more important? And I say, no.
No, what else is there?
I'm usually at SummerSlam because it's usually in Los Angeles.
Right, that's right. Are you thinking about maybe going to WrestleMania 29 in New York?
You know, it's a possibility. Usually that's a tough travel time for me just because, you know, I've got a 12-year-old boy and kids in school, and it's like, it's hard to justify. Okay, honey, I'm going to fly to New York and not take my 12-year-old boy and go to wrestling because I know he's got school tomorrow.
I just think it's going to be interesting because it's going to be outdoors in early 90 April.
Seconds.
It could be cold.
Yeah, it could be.
I don't think they've ever done a show in a cold weather area before like that. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah. That is cool. I didn't know it was going to be outdoors.
Yeah, it's going to be in that new Jets Giant Stadium, the MetLife.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty great.
That's going to be a great show.
Well, Nick, just promise me you'll come back when I'm in L.A. so we could just talk wrestling. I don't even want to talk anything.
60 seconds.
I would love to. I have so many others. Do you remember Muhammad Hassan?
Oh, yeah. Him and Hulk Hogan went at it that one WrestleMania 25. And then, he was beating up Eugene. He had Eugene in the camel lock, and there hits the Hulk. I think that was in L.A. You saw that show, probably.
Yeah, well, you remember, well, we can talk about this the next time, but the way Muhammad Hassan got taken off the air.
Yeah, because he was doing the throat-cutting gesture.
It was also, I remember it vividly, because it was 7-7. It was the day of the subway bombings in London.
Yeah.
And SmackDown came on that night, and they kept running this disclaimer underneath the picture all the time.
10 seconds.
Tonight's match was previously taped, and in light of the events of today, please don't think that we did this, you know, as some sort of, you know, it, just a constant disclaimer throughout the show. And I'm like, what in the heck? And he comes out and he does that whole throat-cutting thing, and they surround the Undertaker, and it looks like a beheading video.
Oh, yeah. And this is how politically correct our country's gotten, because remember when Sergeant Slaughter went traitor, all the terrible stuff he did? He lit a flag on fire. He lit a flag on fire, and they're mad about a throat gesture, yeah.
Yeah, I know. And I love that. That's the thing I love about wrestling, is what they come up with to make the audience hate the bad guy so much that they'll pay $50 to see somebody pretend to kick his ass.
Yeah, and Vince is usually pretty good at that.
Yeah.
McMahon's usually the best, and Ric Flair, of course. Ric Flair, though, it was hard to even hate him, though, because he was just so friggin' cool. Like,
he was the best.
Yeah.
I remember being a teenager in a pancake house.
Yeah.
In Charlotte, North Carolina. And we're sitting there having breakfast, and Ric Flair comes in with a fur coat on and two women beside him. You know, obviously, he looks like he'd been up all night. He walks into the house of pancakes, and somebody eating breakfast goes, "Hey, Ric, what's happening?" And Ric Flair goes, "I am, baby."
I am. That's the best. Now, it's for my booker and producer that's listening, Pat Tobias, you know I've been telling you, get me Ric Flair. Get Nick and I Ric Flair, because Nick's going to come on. We're going to talk to the Nature Boy.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. Thank you. Nick, thank you so much. Justified, of course, is coming back on when? In the fall?
Yeah, we'll be back on the air in February. We start shooting again the first week in October.
I really much look forward to it. We'll have you on before before the show comes back, and we'll do some wrestling talk. Nick, you're the best, man.
Thanks, Matthew. I had fun.
Thank you. Go enjoy your screening. Have a good time.
Okay. Yeah,
all right. Talk to you later.
Definitely.
Bye-bye. Woo! Woo! Nature Boy! Yeah, we're in OT. That's right. Mikey, what you got going on there?
There's a Facebook page to get Ric Flair and Hangover 3. You're going to start a Facebook page?
That's why I'm trying
to
get him on the show.
Ric Flair on the show.
Oh, good point. No, I just want to get him on Hangover 3.
Hold on.
There we go.
Hold on. they're making another Hangover.
Yeah.
Yeah. Supposedly, it's not going to be anything like the first two. It's going to be different.
Well, considering that the first two was part one in fucking Asia.
Yeah, it's basically the same movie.
I mean,
supposedly part 3 is going to be completely different.
Part 2 is the sorry ass. I mean, what a fucking soak shit of a movie that second one.
I agree with you. It's awful. It's awful. Lenny DeStefano and I saw it in the theaters. I remember we weren't really laughing out loud.
No, I saw it, and the first thing I thought to myself was, I wanted to like track down.
And Luisi, there you go.
I forget
about you all the time.
I wanted to like fly to L.A. and go track down Bradley Cooper and just like smack him over the back of the head and then just take like $11.50 out of his pocket.
Well, the good thing about Bradley Cooper is, you know, he made his money. Now he can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah, well.
There it is. So he made his sequel money, and he made his Hangover 3 money. So he's good now. Yeah, that movie was bad.
What was that awful movie he did where he took the pills that made him smarter?
Limitless.
No, that was great.
I thought it was good.
I thought that movie was about Adderall.
I thought it was good. You hated it?
You hated
it.
I thought it was about Adderall.
I thought it was about Adderall.
It was a metaphor about Adderall?
Yeah. Because I tell you what, if anybody's out there is fucking as messed up as I am, okay, let me tell you something. I pop a couple Adderalls. I was doing homework. I mean, I didn't ever done that before.
By the way, I haven't lost enough weight yet to blow myself, but pretty good show today.
Yeah.
Frank Grillo, Nick Searcy, Joe Carnahan, Bruce Fretz. Pretty good.
All-star lineup.
Pretty good. Yeah. Lee's triumphant return. Man, it's so weird looking at Skinny Lee.
Well,
he's looking less like Marty Sherman than
usual.
Hold
on. Time out. He's got a long way to catch up with Steve, though.
No, congratulations to Steve Weirich, as we've learned today. What it was, 85 pounds?
85 pounds.
Very good.
And he's running in the Brookfield Zoo 5K.
God bless. God bless.
That's a lot of fun.
but healthy floppy titty is the key there.
What?
Healthy flop titty.
Well, why you gotta talk like that?
I know, I'm awful. I'm just terrible.
you're a terrible human being.
I gotta tell you, I saw Mikey lifting today, 350 pounds. He was benching like 350 today. Unreal. Yeah. Yeah, I was spotting for him. 350.
You were spotting for him?
Calm down.
Well,
calm down.
Here's the deal. I went to the gym and did chest yesterday, but the problem is I never have anybody to spot me. So even though I did chest yesterday, I knew I was going to look like an idiot with these guys going, oh, here he is coming in again. But I was like, I'm in the car. I'm like, Maddie, you think you could come with me to the gym for a minute? I need a spot. He's like, yeah, sure, whatever. So he's in there with his sunglasses hanging and he's in his jeans. any spot in the stand. I'm like, Maddie, you want to do a
What's
couple?
What's happening, Mikey?
I look at him and go, you want to do a couple sets? He's like, nah, I'm just, you know, I'm not really, I've got to get the tee up a little more. Yeah. And, you know, I've just.
I do got to get the tee up more. What's happening, Mikey?
Not much, pal.
Oh, you're supposed to say, I am. Woo.
Woo.
I'll get you again before the end of the night.
Yeah.
I'll get you again. What's happening? It's great to, because we read those Ric Flair stories every week or those wrestler stories every week. It's great to have someone that had a Ric Flair story come on and tell one. It just proves that we're not full of shit.
At a pancake breakfast, nonetheless.
Well, you know, if you want to meet a wrestler, you go to any IHOP in the South. You'll meet one. Or any Waffle House, House of Pancakes. You'll meet a wrestler. Someone will walk in.
So next time WWE's in town, we're going to all the IHOPs around the Allstate Arena.
I've heard of so many stories where The Undertaker has been spotted at IHOP.
Why IHOP?
Because they're always open.
Because they're worldly. They're international.
Yeah, one, they're always open. Two, it's affordable.
Yeah, we're going to go to those French restaurants tonight. It's international.
I mean, outside of Ric Flair, have we ever heard of a wrestler going to Gibson's? No. Rick's a little classier than that.
You know, well, you got to look at the demographics that most wrestlers source themselves from.
And they're IHOP people. There's Gibson's people, and there's Waffle House people. Wrestlers are Waffle
House
people.
Hold on.
I've eaten at both. I'll take the Waffle House.
Hold on. Quick question. I've actually never been to the Waffle House before.
Never.
Yeah, but I heard it's like, it's the same fucking waffle. It's the same fucking waffle. They just put different fruit flavoring.
What IHOP does with pancakes, they do with waffle. What I'm trying to say is IHOP specializes in their pancake. Waffle House specializes in their waffle.
Well,
IHOP,
hold on.
IHOP just puts different toppings on their pancakes. Same with Waffle House.
Well, let me just throw this out here. I don't know if anybody's noticed, but IHOP's pancakes suck.
No, I never said they were good. By the way, if you want a great waffle, you go to Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles in L.A. Fantastic waffle. Fantastic fried chicken. Great seasoning on the fried chicken. And you know what? I am not always the only white person there.
Actually, hold on. If you want a fantastic waffle, make your way to Bala Dolce over in Lakeview on the east north side of Chicago. You ever been over there before?
Yes.
Okay, listen. Here's the problem with that. Okay. Breakfast.
Wait.
Wake up at 7, 8 a.m. and drive an hour to go get a fucking waffle?
Hey, buddy. You ever had the fucking waffles over there before?
Are they worth me waking up at 7 or 8 and taking
an hour
drive?
They're so fucking good, you can buy them walking by on the street.
I don't know if I can have waffles anymore, though.
They're Belgian-style snack waffles. So basically, it's like, basically in Belgium.
Eggos?
Yeah. You just munch on them like a street snack.
So they're like
they
Eggo size.
Not on Clark Street?
Yeah.
Oh, I do know what you're talking about. Okay.
They actually take like the sugar cane and they explode it. They burst it under like thousands of PSI and it bursts under heat and pressure into a sugar crystal.
You're talking
and they
crazy
and they
right
use
now.
That sugar to actually make the waffles. It's unfucking believable.
He knows everything. If there was a chemistry major for food, if there was like a food chemistry major, Mikey would have graduated.
No, I'm telling you. I'm just saying it's fucking outstanding.
He'd be a doctor traveling around the world giving speeches.
Dr. Terzo and his PSIs and his sugars, yes. Yes. You could have been a doctor in food chemistry.
I do. If there could be a doctor. If there was a school for food, I would be a doctor. I could have got my degree. Culinary school. Yeah, but culinary school.
But he can't become a doctor. He doesn't want to be a chef.
The
one in New York my buddy's sister went to. It's
the best one. The problem is I feel like you can't do much with it. Like, what are you going to do?
Become a cook? Line cook at Denny's? Maybe IHOP?
You could bump in a wrestler.
Yeah.
Woo! Woo! What's happening, Charles?
I am, baby.
Woo! that's great.
The Chef Boyardee blog?
Oh, the Chef Boyardee. I'll never forget one of the first shows we did where Mikey gave us the lecture about Chef Boyardee.
It was a good lecture.
He goes, actually, it's not Chef Boyardee. It's Chef Boyardee. He's from Ohio, blah, blah, blah.
He opened up the Italian restaurant over in Ohio. He was great. And then he started selling his sauce, and then he started selling the pasta and everything, and then he decided, fuck it. You know what? I'm going to start canning this shit. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly how he said it, too. I'm going to start canning this shit. With his chef hat on.
Yeah.
Hey,
well, Boyardee's doing it now. Well,
how about Louis Lombardi putting out his own Italian products? Oh my!
Yeah, like every other guy from The Sopranos. Okay.
Oh. So, but they look like good products, don't they? Did you like the labels, Mikey?
Yeah, they were great.
Oh, Mikey, are you just a little jealous you don't have your own Italian products out with your face on them? Just be honest. Be honest if it's a part of it.
You know, no, actually, it has nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with it. I don't know. I have a feeling if Mikey's face was on a bottle of olive oil, we'd be seeing that bottle of olive oil every fucking day. He'd be walking around with it going, hey, guys, you want some olive oil for your Big Mac?
That may be true.
Yeah, that would be like... That is when you know your life is made, Mikey, when we get your face on some fucking food products.
Well, you know, I figure if I when this whole thing takes off, I'll do like the Coppola thing, and I'm not going to do it with the wine. I'm going to do it with the olive oil.
Well, like Lombardi's doing.
It, right, but I'm going to do it with the olive oil, but I'm actually
going to be like $200 bottle of olive oil.
But I'm not just going to go buy other olive oil and relabel it or anything like that. No, I'm not saying that's what Louis's doing. I'm just saying
Don't worry. When you see Louis in December, we're just going to play this back for him when we're at a bar.
No,
we're
going to
be like, Louis, here's Mikey's opinion on your olive oil business.
What I'm saying is
I just didn't know someone that looks like Bluto is making olive oil. Ironic, is it not?
And in any event, no, like I said, I've never tried any of the products, but I'm just saying that wouldn't be bad. I'd like to have the little olive oil business.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is something Louis is passionate about. He's passionate about food.
Well,
and other things. But I don't know if you could put your face on pound bags of weed.
You know,
but,
you know, I'm just going to throw this out here, but I feel like yeah, I couldn't be doing that.
No.
But I feel like olive oil is really underutilized in the bedroom. I mean.
All right, I got to hear about this. What are you talking about? You use olive oil during sex?
I did one time.
Oh, my God.
He rubbed it on them
titties. It was fantastic.
Were you dipping bread in it and throwing some crushed red pepper on it?
What? I hope there was no cheese involved.
I bet Mikey was standing over with the cheese grater and the Parmesan going, tell me when, sweetheart. Tell me when. Yeah, he's turning the pepper mill. Oh. Tell me when.
Yeah. And when he gets low, he just runs the bread through the pubic hair and gets the cheese off of there.
Oh, yeah, that's about it.
Anyway, thank God it was a roommate's bed.
Didn't clean the sheets.
I didn't have to explain that.
I didn't know you
one.
Used your parents' bed. the roommates.
Well, you know, when you're fairly intoxicated and you're in a situation and I'm just going, fuck, I really just like...
I'm just
but this thing here, picture this. You're in the fucking bedroom. You're like, you're half drunk. You're fucking horny as hell. You're just like, they're laying down there and you just start running and you're like, I just want some fucking oil. I'm going to grease the shit out of this bitch. And you're just sitting, this is running through your head, you know? And you're like, hold on a second. They're like, what's going on? You fucking run back to the kitchen. You're fucking opening doors and shit. You find like, you're staring at the soap, like the dish soap. You're like, Nah, that's probably not the best choice. Boom, you whip open the cabinet, and you're thumbing through. You see the vegetable oil. You see the canola oil. And there it is, the olive oil. And you're going, that's perfect. It's great for the skin. It moisturizes. It's got vitamins. I'm going back.
Vitamins? They got vitamins?
Whatever. Yeah, but yeah, you go back, and she's like, what the fuck are you going to do? Next thing, I'm just dumping it. I just dumped it on top of her.
Charles, what are you trying to keep down right now?
It was
I'm
fantastic.
Trying to keep this mental picture out of my fucking head.
I'm serious. So I just dump it. She's like, she starts freaking out. I'm like, shh. Just, you know, just like
that I can imagine Mikey going.
If Mikey goes bald, is he going to be rubbing olive oil on his head when he goes
out? So anyway, it was great. But the sheets, the mattress, it was just I.
So you took grease ball to a literal term.
Oh fuck! I mean, man. No, I didn't.
Flavor.
I bet it wasn't extra virgin.
I mean, let me just tell you something. That
honey,
was like,
honey, you taste like black truffle.
That was like fucking a greased pig, okay?
I'm sure no woman's ever called Mikey a greased pig before. No, never.
Actually, no, actually, still, it never happened.
Well, where's Lenny when you need him to find out?
I'm telling you, it was a great experience, so you should try it sometime.
I'm pretty sure Lenny uses motor oil or olive
oil. No. You got to use... See, I mean,
have you seen his hair? That thing's shiny.
You know what was weird, though? Like, the next day, like, it was, this is like 20 hours later. I had showered since this point, okay? And I'm driving in the car, and I'm just, like, feeling my forehead. I'm like, man, why am I so fucking greasy still? It's just like, it, I don't know.
So you take out the bread and just dip it on the forehead and then take a bite?
Yeah, Mikey doesn't have a handkerchief. He has a loaf of bread in his pocket that he goes...
He just pulls over. Just see him ripping off a little piece of the loaf.
Did I tell you, I snapped one of the buttons off my Robert Graham last night.
Oh, I saw it. It was the casualty. Now, what I didn't ask him, and I should have, is did it pop off or did it snap off?
No, it got...
Is it like you had a big meal at Gibson's and it went boom?
No.
Subway commercial?
No, let's just say something got caught and they got popped off.
Lady talk.
No.
Belt buckle.
Something got caught. What gets caught in a button?
It was the side of the table when I was hopping back in the booth.
I thought he had some weird story about pussy and buttons, like olive oil.
No, just got caught in the table.
I hope you're recording these sound bites to make fun of him, because if I was telling the story, God knows.
Yeah, I can see it now. He's gonna be like I can just see it like a month from now. He's gonna get that look at it. So you hit a button. Oh, the fucking olive oil. Okay.
I poured olive oil all over.
You know what I still, till this day, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall when this girl got home. Because I specifically, can you imagine?
If she made it home, if she didn't slip somewhere and fall off a cliff.
No, no. By the way, I was curious. Was she like, what are you doing? She was drunker than I was.
Are you? some women are into some interesting things.
I mean, it was fun.
He thought he was going to wrap him up in the sheets like a burrito and just take a bite. Is that what you're saying?
So back to the idea of putting my face on a bag of weed. I think we could sell some merch.
No.
Not in L.A.?
No.
I shouldn't put out my own brand?
For medicinal purposes.
What are you going to be? Should I start calling you Seth Rogen now, too?
You think he has his face on the bag
of
weed?
Oh, he would if he could.
He would if he could, but he can't. That's where
and
I
neither can you.
No. You will definitely be High Times, man.
You know what,
Maddie,
if you want to... Here, do yourself a favor. Just start getting your face slapped on the side of every to-go bag from Coney Island. Okay?
That's what I need to do.
There you go.
I need to be like, Mike, we're doing stuff over at Coney.
You know, here, I already got the perfect shot. It's your face photo that's over there on the banner.
Oh, I thought you were...
Oh, yeah.
I thought you had some worse pictures to put on there. Oh, I'm looking forward to having Coney again, by the way. I mean, this is no plug. I'm just looking forward to it. I want that burger.
It was a good burger. Burger's the best part.
Yeah, I want that burger bad.
I know. I mean, that's good.
Coney Dog over on West Sunset, 8873.
Next to Whiskey Go Go, across from the Viper Room.
That's the plug. Yeah, but that burger. You know, I wonder if Binder's ever going to put our photos up on the wall.
I want that. Are we not Detroit enough for him? He's got to do it like Gibson's, like a Chicago thing, where he's got our photo. It'll be like me and him taking a picture, and then it'll have like our signature at the bottom. We're going on the fucking wall.
I was
going to
say the three of us aren't fitting in that photo.
No, but we got to have one individually. Like, hold on. But you know what else? You know what I want? I want to make it look like it does at Gibson's.
His photo's up at Mr. Beef, Lee. Yeah. Now, what happened? Did you
I hate
offer
fucking
it
Mr. Beef.
No, they asked for it.
They asked for your photo at Mr. Beef. Oh, okay.
All right. So, but yeah,
like Lenny at Richards.
What we need to do is we need to make it look like a nasty 80s photo. Like we got to dress 80s, get like a bad camera, and make it look like it's been there.
So
since,
basically,
like, you know,
I just show up. He's like, I don't have to do it.
Nah, you're pretty much
just wear one of your holy AC/DC t-shirts.
Oh yeah. So I just want to tell our listeners, by the way, they were listening to the Carnahan interview and the Frank and the Bruce, and I was referring to something involving Joe and I. We're going to have an announcement on that in the coming week or two, and that's going to be exciting. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be good, because there may be some people that are like, I don't know what they were talking in fucking code when they weren't all blowing each other and talking about them all being questionably gay. That's pretty much what the interview was. It was all us questioning our sexualities. I love how Luisi knows we're doing a radio show, so he brings up video clips we should play.
Of a guy at a Cubs game who is giving
oral
sex.
Let's explain to Alex how the radio works.
Matt, I need you to tell me something real quick.
Yeah, what's up?
Why do I come here?
Oh, my God, I thought we were still talking dirty. I'm like, you come here?
What went on in the bathroom when you, Lenny and Alex were in there?
Yeah, what was that? Mike, can you fill us in on your little bathroom trip?
Well, I went to show him this little comedic skit that my mom sent me about when you go home.
God.
Like, you know, the mothers will always think you're hungry. And he basically tells a skit about how he sneaks home, like he's in high school. He comes home like at 3 o'clock in the morning. He sneaks into the kitchen. He's trying to find the light, and he turns on the fucking garbage disposal, which we know we've all done. And he's like, my mom's on me like a fucking panther. And she starts beating the shit out of me. The fuck's wrong with you? What's this? And he's kicking him in the stomach. And then she's like, you look hungry. Do you want something to eat? Did you eat yet? And it was just like a funny skit about that. And I think it'd be funny because I know we've all experienced
that. That is funny. I can't get it off my mind. Tune in the next couple weeks. Trust me. This is huge what's going on. I'm so jacked. Mikey knows. We're super excited. We were in the car talking about it like half the day and then talking about broads the other half because I always have broad problems.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah. Can we get back to this Italian broad conversation, by the way? Because I've been dealing with another one, okay? Man, I want to say I'm done with Italian women, but I can't. I can't. Mikey, right? It's just too hard to walk away from.
It's a fucking sickness.
And I got to tell you, these broads are out of their fucking mind.
They're not all that like that. They're not all like that.
Not no,
all of our mothers are okay, but the rest of them are crazy.
No. Yeah, but you know what? You know how
you know how
Freud used to say that all guys want to marry their mother or whatever?
That's not true.
Italian guys.
No.
Not Italian guys. They may all say their mothers are saints.
Well,
but
first off, I apparently must have some deep-seated hatred for my mother because it seems like every girl that I'm attracted to is like the opposite of my mother, so yeah. I don't know.
Well, maybe your mother's special and you just want to keep your mother, and you don't want your girlfriend to have any similarities to her because...
Without getting too graphic, just like let's throw it down the line. My mom kind of has huge tits, not really any huge tits. My mom has no ass, really kind of like a nice ass. My mom, she's a blonde, really like brunettes. I mean, there's this whole trend here. I don't know.
There's definitely a trend. Chucky, have you...
I kind of have the same trend. My mom, not a Jew. Girls I go after, Jewish broads. I love Jewish broads.
Why do you like Jewish broads so much?
They give great head.
Oh, God. Well, they got to make up for the fact they don't put out, I guess, right?
When you're in your mom's soccer van, there's only so much you can do.
I could do a whole lot.
Hey, you know what? I got head in my mom's soccer van. I'll try to exit dressed as a dirty cop.
Oh,
and then she fell getting out of the van.
I'll just never forget.
Hey, you know what, Chucky? Just
Andy Garcia thinking what a pervert you are.
Andy Garcia knows I'm a pervert.
Well, that's kind of a... You know what? That's one of those accomplishments in life. Like, when I went to one of my favorite Italian restaurants, and they had a table set up for me.
One of them.
Hold on. And they gave me a hug and a kiss when I walked in, and they sat me in the back fucking corner away from every other customer there because they knew that they were afraid that they'd lose business because of me. I mean, it's kind of like a pat on the back and a slap on the
ass. So should I put that on my OKCupid profile? Andy Garcia knows I'm a pervert.
Are you on OKCupid?
Yeah.
Which ones are you on again?
OKCupid and Plenty of Fish.
Wait.
Which one do you get more action from?
Plenty of Fish. No, I'm sorry. OKCupid.
Really?
Is Plenty of Fish getting played out now?
Yeah, I very
do. You put your picture on OKCupid?
Yeah, they're on both.
I feel like
you're comfortable with that.
Yeah, I don't care.
I'm
know where I work. I have no dignity left.
No, that's true.
I'm on Plenty of Fish. I set up. Me and my buddy told me about the POF and about how he's getting laid off of it all the time. And so me and my big buddy.
Yeah, I have a
Dave,
friend who gets laid off Plenty of Fish too, but I don't go on it.
Yeah, but this is going back like 3-4 years ago.
I don't know. I was on. There's some nasty broads on nowadays.
Well, I didn't know it was either. So we set up this profile, you know, and. Chucky, I don't know about you. I feel like a lot of the women that like contact you, like they're actually just porn stars trying to sell like a website or something.
No, I've never had that.
Never on OKCupid? So OKCupid's the place to go. Yeah. You know, I
actually had a very attractive girl email me earlier this week.
Hey.
Probably going to do something this weekend.
How was that?
And especially when he looked at me when he said that, like, hey.
So let me ask you this, Charles. No action lately? Not any of your Republican get-togethers or whatever? I'm pretty sure you only go to these conservative get-togethers for ass.
Two reasons.
Okay.
Ass, and I really need to find a new job.
Does anybody feel like going out and getting a drink?
No, there's that. Yeah, there's that.
Oh. I got a number from there, but I've talked to the girl, but I haven't gone out with her yet.
You haven't gone out with her yet? No. Have you gone out with any broads lately?
Yeah, I went out with one 2 weeks ago.
No good?
Not really.
Was she hot?
She was okay.
Six?
You know, yeah. they cannot all be nines and tens.
Yeah, so she was
a six. Gotta stop picking up girls when I'm drinking.
You know what? I'm not too sure you want to marry a nine or a ten.
Say what?
What, Chucky? Would you marry a 9 or a 10? Honestly, because looks fade, but that personality sticks around forever.
I'll tell you what: if it was like a 9 who is just dull and boring and stupid,
Met a 9 who's exciting, fun, and smart,
or a 7 who's like cool and I can hang out with stuff, I'd take the 7 any day.
You know, I'm just gonna throw this out here.
I know Mikey's more about the 7s than the 10s. He wants to find a wife, not a.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, sure.
And then, right, and then the 9s and 10s are the gumas.
No, you know, I'm just saying, you know. So when are we going to go see Kate Kelton?
Did you notice, as soon as she did our show and as filthy as we were talking with her.
Oh, she got on Playboy.
Who hit her up the next week to come on their show? Playboy.
Yep. They
fuckers.
I'm sorry. They must
capitalized.
They must have saw
that
and went, "Oh, we need this."
Absolutely, they saw that. Absolutely.
And you know what? She's fucking great.
She is.
When we go out to LA though, we got to hit her up. In all honesty,
I know you guys and your foe.
No homo. I think it's called Fa or whatever it is.
Lee always corrects me on that. Fa.
Who the fuck spells it PHO and it's called Fa?
The Vietnamese.
That's why they're not from this
That's
country.
Who. That's who. Oh, man. This show was a lot of fun today. The interviews were fun. Joe's always great when Joe comes up. But Frank's great. And you know what I love about Frank? He has no problem ripping on people or movies.
No.
He has no problem with it.
And Joe does?
No, Joe has no problem with it. But when what's that movie that the Reese Witherspoon, the Chris Pine one? This Means War. When Frank ripped on that, I was like, thank God someone ripped on that piece. Oh, shit.
Was Tom Hardy in that movie?
Yeah, he sure was.
Oh, yeah. So let's ask a question.
I saw Magic Mike, by the way.
You know, I heard it actually wasn't a terrible movie.
It's not awful. It's bad, but it's like... B movie enjoyably bad, like a 70s movie.
So it's Showgirls for guys.
And McConaughey's amazing in it, flat out. He's just great. McConaughey, McConaughey, Woody Harrelson, two best guys going today. I swear, I think so. I really do. Killer Joe was amazing. McConaughey, if he doesn't get nominated for that role, it's because the Oscar voters can't sit through that movie, especially the last 30 minutes. But
what's the last 30 minutes?
Well, I'm not going to spoil it on the show, but it does involve...
The movie's been out for a while now,
It does involve a chicken leg and a scene that may or may not turn you on, Mikey. That's the inside joke. You had to see it.
Fuck it. You know.
And there's Gina Gershon badge in it and tits. Tons of tits. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the girl in it, Juno Temple, is that her name? She's naked all over it. And McConaughey's phenomenal in it. Just great. He's just great. I really think that guy can act when he wants to. When it's a well-written project.
He was pretty good in Lincoln Lawyer.
Fantastic. I thought that turned his career around. I thought Lincoln Lawyer was the start. Because, you know, Lenny still thinks Lincoln Lawyer is the best movie he saw last year.
Really?
Obviously, he didn't see more than 10 movies, but
I don't know if it was the best, but it was a great one.
God bless. It was good. And Marissa Tomei is always looking good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about Two for the Money?
Two for the Money was bad. I didn't like it. But I will say this about Two for the Money. McConaughey's not the reason it wasn't good.
No, neither was...
Not Rene Russo, not Al Pacino. And I hate to say this because Rene Russo is married to the guy, but the guy that wrote the movie is the reason the movie's no good.
Yeah, well, I'm saying McConaughey was good in it, though.
Yeah, they're fine in it. It's just Chuck and I saw Two for the Money together.
Was Armand in it?
And we were really pumped.
Money?
Yeah, Armand was in it.
Okay.
And we were really pumped, and then it was just kind of like we left the theater and we were like,
And you get that Al Pacino overacting.
Yeah.
What a great final scene.
Pacino, he's starting to calm down on that. I think he's heard the rumors. I think he's gotten the gossip.
I heard he's scheduled
that Gotti movie's not happening. I love the Gotti. They don't have the old one, the new one. They don't have the money for it.
Well, my friend of mine's friends with Armand. I mean, and so we
like Armand here.
I got the scoop on. There's a lot of stuff that he just
judge directs.
He doesn't he passes on. Yeah, I don't care.
Well, he's got the money.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good guy, family guy, you know. He does a lot of stuff overseas.
He's like Chaz Palminteri.
Yeah.
If he'd rather pass on stuff and spend time with his family.
I'll tell you what, though, and he's fucking great.
By the way, Lenny and I ate at Brando's yesterday. If you haven't been to Brando's in Berwyn, you got to go. It's fantastic.
How about the sausage place we went to?
Oh, that was fantastic, too. But my point about the Brando's was we were watching Bronx Tale, and I am just – Chaz is so great in that movie. Like,
outstanding.
Just fucking great, man. He is, I mean, that is a guy that made his career off his one life story, right? But, I mean, it was a good one. It was a good one.
Yeah.
And he's doing Modern Family again, I know. He's doing another episode of that this year, and I'm looking forward to talking to Chaz again soon. And we never went to his restaurant still in Baltimore.
Well, I mean, because
it's Baltimore.
I know Baltimore's down the street, so.
Well, it is Baltimore.
You know.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what we were thinking about doing.
I'm trying to think. What are some other good movies that Chaz did?
Pool Hall Junkies fun.
Well, yeah, no, it was great.
That's a fun movie.
Analyze This, Analyze That.
He
was in the first one.
I don't agree with Billy Friedkin, but I love Billy Friedkin, and him and I have become kind of pals. But Billy's favorite movie is Jade that he's done. And I don't agree. I think it's not as bad as the reviews were, that's for sure. But Chaz was good in it. So,
you know,
Analyze This, Analyze That.
I just think guys like Chaz Palminteri and Armand Desante.
Bullets Over Broadway.
I mean,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Usual Suspects. Fantastic.
No, for sure. But what I'm saying is those two actors, with all the, like, with The Sopranos and some of the Goodfellas and all those movies that came out, those are just two iconic Italian-American actors that are like Church Caesar was saying, underutilized.
Well, I think Chuck's favorite Chaz performance is Night at the Roxbury.
That and Oscar.
You Touch My Ace? Oh, Oscar was great. Huh?
He was fucking funny in that, though.
In Night at the Roxbury? Well, without the Chris Kattan poison in the movie, it may not have been so bad. He has got to be the most annoying actor of all time.
How did he have a career to begin with?
I don't know, but Corky Romano, as we were talking about,
oh my God,
Mikey, that was the biggest
piece
of shit I ever seen.
Did you hear the Norm MacDonald story when he was screwing with him when Pam Anderson was there?
Yeah, on Howard Stern, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good story.
Yeah, because Chris thought he was going to hook up with Pam.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And he kept getting on Norm MacDonald about, because Norm didn't like to rehearse in character.
Right.
And right before they were about to go on the air, he started screaming at Norm, and Norm just looks at him and goes, "Yeah, Chris, we know you're gay. Calm down." Right in front of Pam Anderson, who he was trying
to impress. Well, because Kattan wanted to make out with every broad that came on the show.
Yeah.
He wanted to have one sketch where he'd make out with whatever hot broad was on that week to try to prove how straight he is. Didn't work. If you saw Corky Romano, allegedly, didn't work. Yeah, the Gotti movie that's never happened.
Is that the one with Travolta?
It's not happening because they don't have the money. They don't have the money together. They tricked all these guys to signing on, and I think they paid these guys to sign on, and they couldn't get the rest of the money.
Well,
they didn't know the movie market was going to go the way it's going.
Yeah,
right
yeah, but even then, so how can I mean? Anybody who saw the original Gotti movie with Asante, how can you beat
that? And for a TV movie, it's fantastic.
It was an HBO movie.
HBO. But it's fantastic.
The HBO original Rat Pack? That was fun.
Yeah.
Never saw it.
The HBO Rat Pack was pretty
good. Yeah, that was good.
Movie.
That was good. I had some problems with it, but it was good.
Ray Liotta was good, though.
Hey, Chucky, since I know Maddie's fucking in outer space over there, did you see the new Boardwalk Empire started up again?
No.
Chucky hates the show.
I'm not watching
it. He's in outer space with me, pal.
I'm not watching it anymore.
No, you're not watching?
I got very bored with season two, and I don't care for a lot of the storylines going on. I don't have no desire to watch
it. Oh, it's getting heated up, man.
It's no Breaking Bad.
Oh, Chicago and Cicero are in it now. I mean, it's getting pretty fucking good.
You know,
Maddie,
Tom,
you've never even fucking seen it,
you know,
okay?
I just get bored watching the previews.
You've
for
never
that show.
Seen it.
I don't like costume dramas. I hate them.
It's
not a costume drama. It's the 1920s. It's fucking great.
It's costumes.
It's 1923. What the fuck do you want?
It's a costume drama.
Oh, shut up.
My Sundays are going to now be filled with football and Dexter.
Amen, brother. Amen. And not on the Dexter, on the football.
Well, I'm enjoying Boardwalk Empire thoroughly.
It's no Breaking Bad. It's no Breaking Bad. Come on.
Totally different show.
I've never seen Breaking Bad. I can't comment.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm falling asleep during
the Dude, I watched like four TV shows. Four of them. And you guys watch 100 and you miss some of the most important.
I don't watch 100.
Wait, what are the other two that are important that I'm missing here?
No, I'm talking about he's not watching
Cake
Breaking
Boss.
Bad. Hold on. He's not watching Breaking Bad and you're not watching Boardwalk Empire.
Well, I got to tell you, I get bored watching even the previews for Boardwalk Empire.
What's the deal with Game of Thrones, by the way?
It's just no Sopranos.
It's good. Game of Thrones is good.
And I'm not into the fantasy thing.
I'm not into it either.
I hated the Lord. I shouldn't say hate. I did not like the Lord of the Rings movie.
I was talking to a buddy of mine.
No, but I'm fantasy wise. Like I don't get into the fantasy.
We had a big discussion about this. I was talking to a buddy of mine. He's an Oscar winning writer, and he's not into that shit at all. He's not into it at all. But him and I agree. Game of Thrones is good. We got hooked on it. It's good.
Game of Thrones is very.
It's good. It's good.
I don't know. I'll
give Boardwalk a chance at some point, but I'm watching Sopranos for the fifth time.
Yeah, I'm like season six. You'll be like, hey, watch the first two episodes.
It was okay.
It was all right.
Because you know what? It's not Sopranos.
That was a pretty good Jay Leno. You just got to swing your head back and forth.
He did swing his head back and forth. He was like, hey. I guess I'm Jay now.
No, him.
I don't have Jay's money.
Hold on. Yeah. My Matty Aaron impression is Jay Leno, and yours is Gilbert Godfrey, okay? I don't know what the fuck's going on over here.
Somewhere in the middle, there's a real Matthew Aaron voice.
Boy, yeah. You had to pick, like, the two ugliest guys in show business, too. Thank you so much.
I would be proud to be Jay Leno.
I saw Jay at Philly's Best in Burbank with Caesar. And he was wearing his denim, as usual.
Yeah, yeah.
He's always rocking the denim shirt, like 1980 denim.
Hey, guys. You know, I see, I'm a car guy, though, so, I mean.
Yeah, he's a car guy, and he seemed really friendly. He took pictures with anyone that asked. He shakes hands. He goes in there and eats every Friday. He loves Philly's Best. He loves it.
Well, maybe when we're go over there. And then,
Alex is laughing like a little schoolgirl. He's like gonna cry
because he's never heard a Jay Leno impression before.
Well, you know, I just went over to see what he's driving.
He was driving an F-150 when I saw him because he was hanging out with a bunch of the guys before he went to the auto show. But I'm sure he went back to his house, got one of his cars in his custom made garage.
Now, can you do tours of his garage? Isn't he so like? Can't, isn't there like a?
If you're his buddy, he'll invite you by to look at his. Garage.
I thought I know it's like a compound.
If you like, go on his show or you meet him or something.
There's a website for his garage.
Yeah,
well, of course there is. JayLenosGarage.com or something like
because
that.
Because he wanted to have a show at one point on it, and he just doesn't have the time. I don't know what he's thinking.
Yeah, he's a hardworking man, from what I understand.
He works 5 days a week, and then he works the weekends doing stand up.
Oh wow, sounds like
he makes $30 million. Up until he took that pay cut a few weeks ago. He makes $30 million at the Tonight Show, and then he makes $20 million a year or somewhere around there doing stand-up.
And he's not funny anytime.
Ooh. You know, hold on.
You know what? Jay used to be very funny. In the early 80s, Jay was hilarious.
I agree with you.
And his biography is actually excellent. That he wrote. It's funny.
Because like
basically, I think I think he used all his '80s bits and put it in this biography. So even though it came out when he was doing the Tonight Show, it was like old Jay all over again. I love his biography. It's called Leading with My Chin, and it's a good. I don't know if Jay's the best leader ever, but yes, a good biography.
Let me ask you a question. How the hell did Jay Leno? I mean, because I being born in '86, mm-hmm. by the time I was coherent, okay, mm-hmm. in 1990. You know, I mean, Jay Leno was already kind of getting to that point where he's got the show, getting close.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, what the hell was he famous for? Did he just go? How do you go from stand-up comedian
to
fucking
Tonight Show? I'll give you the full Jay Leno story.
I know. Yeah.
Binder and Jay Leno used to be best friends, and they're still friends. But he was Binder's mentor when Binder moved out.
Yeah, you told me.
And here's what happened. Here's the whole Jay Leno story in like a minute. I'm going to make it short. Jay Leno, really famous stand-up comedian. He started getting acting roles and stuff. obviously, Jay, not the greatest actor ever. Collision Course with Pat Morita, good example. Jay then starts getting invited on a Carson. So does Dave. Dave and Jay killing it on Carson all the time. They were like Carson's two favorite guys. Jay would start guest hosting on Carson when Carson would take Fridays off, like Joan Rivers did and all them.
Okay.
Jay, they were going to open up Carson's slot, obviously. At this point, Dave has his show over at NBC later and after Johnny. And they were grooming Dave for Johnny's
seat. All right, wait, so Dave Letterman and Leno were on the Carson show together at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh,
they
together.
Used to be best of friends.
Together. Yeah, they used to be best friends. And then what happened was Jay got jealous of Dave because they were grooming him for Carson. Dave knew that Jay was scheming to get Carson's position. Dave stopped having Jay on his show. Jay got all pissed about it. Jay gave an interview where he's like, I don't know why Dave hates me, blah, blah, blah. Dave says one of his biggest influences in stand-up comedy is Jay Leno. So Jay goes, if I'm one of your biggest influences, why don't I come on your show anymore? Dave has him back on the show because of the public scrutiny about Dave saying Jay's so great and then never having him on anymore. Jay comes on, and basically Jay hides in a closet during board meetings to hear what's being said about him taking over Carson's show. True story. He hid in a closet to eavesdrop over who was going to take over the show. And, like, he was scared shitless. And Jay is – there's a lot of people in the industry that hate Jay because he's kind of slimy. He just really is. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, and buts about what he did to Conan and what he did to Dave. And basically he wormed his way into Dave's position to take over for Carson. Then Dave got a show on CBS.
There was an HBO movie.
There's a book and a movie called The Late Shift.
Yeah.
And it's all about Dave and Jay.
Okay, so how did he con his way into Dave's position?
Well, basically it was going to be Dave's. It was groomed for Dave. It was going to be Dave's. Carson wanted Dave. Carson was pissed they chose Jay. And what ended up happening is Jay and his agents wormed their way in convincing NBC it should be him instead of Dave. They created some drama saying Dave was getting other offers from CBS. That pissed off NBC. Dave ended up getting offers from CBS and took a show there. But
beat him in the race.
Jay and his agent, who's played by Kathy Bates in the movie, and she's fantastic, very shady.
So what exactly happened with Conan?
Well, the Conan story.
I mean, I know the
Conan's
gist of it.
Conan's supposed to take over for Jay Leno. Ratings start to drop. Jay's show was bombing in prime time. His prime time show was bombing. It's basically killed the network. The reason NBC has as low ratings as they do today is because of Jay's primetime show.
Well, I never understood what the hell happened.
What happened was Conan's ratings were dropping, and Jay convinced the people at NBC to give him his job back.
Yeah, but
they told Conan.
What kind of show did he go to again?
He did a primetime show between 9 and 10, which was basically a lead-in for Conan. Which, by the way, Conan had no idea that he was going to do this. He thought Jay was retiring. It was announced after Conan got Jay's spot that Jay was moving up an hour and doing his own show.
Yeah, so basically all they did was take Jay's slot and Conan's slot and move him up.
But that's not the way they pitched it to Conan. That's not the way they pitched it to him. And then once Jay's ratings tanked and Conan's ratings weren't great.
And they gave Jimmy Fallon,
they weren't bad, but then Jay convinced them to fire Conan and give him the position, give him his old job back. And he got it.
And then Jimmy Fallon kept his spot.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think they had offered Conan to take that position back, but he didn't want it.
Fallon? Yeah. I don't know if they offered it to him. I'm sure there's stories that they did.
Yeah,
but
maybe it's a story.
And now he's on TBS.
Yeah. And he's not doing great on TBS. I know that. Ratings aren't fantastic. No. But he's got a $15 million deal. I mean, it's like ironclad. 15 a year. They're not getting rid of him. They don't want to pay him. It doesn't matter if you fucking like him. It doesn't matter if you fucking like him. His ratings aren't great. That's the point.
I like him, and I don't watch him because I just...
I'm not talking about who I like.
I just don't watch TV at all, really, anymore.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad.
I'm just
going to
mention Craig Ferguson.
He's fantastic.
Because I think he's the best out of the four of them.
Here's why Craig's the best. He does.
Which one's Craig Ferguson?
Craig's the one
after
Dave. Here's why.
Is he the British guy or English guy?
Scottish.
Craig's so great. Craig does 20 minutes of original material every night. Craig writes it. He doesn't have writers write his opening monologue. And it's not even really a monologue. It's 20 minutes of his material.
Yeah,
he writes
to
it
a
every
robot.
Night. Now, as Lee and I know from doing stand-up, we know how hard it is to write 20 minutes of material in a year. In a year. This guy's doing 20 minutes a night.
And he tours, too.
Amazing.
He's not doing.
Because
he's always in Chicago at Zany's.
He's an AA brother. I love Craig Ferguson.
No, yeah, he talks about that openly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, all the time. And good for him.
Okay, so anyway, just last question about this. How's Jimmy Fallon's ratings?
They're better. He's doing okay. I think he's tied with Ferguson and some nights beats him. And Mike is shocked.
I can't see.
You know who I think's the best guy on late night outside of Ferguson? It's Jimmy Kimmel. I'll watch Kimmel any day over Fallon or
isn't Kimmel getting time slot
moved
up?
He's moved up to Leno and Letterman, yeah.
I'll watch him over them, too.
Well, look. Jimmy can even fail in that spot, and he's not going to get fired because Leno and Letterman are retiring in a few years, and they're basically going to put him there. Even if his ratings tank, they're going to keep him there because as soon as Leno and Letterman are gone, they're going to hope people hop over to Jimmy because he's been the longest one around in that spot.
What about all these good comedians that they go
with? Well, that's another conversation for another day.
Yeah, that's a whole
other
conversation.
Yeah.
They're not grooming anyone.
I will say this. I have it on very, very good authority. They're already searching for people. That's what I know. I know CBS is already looking for people for Ferguson's spot because Ferguson may or may not be around in a few years.
That's a shame.
I think it's because he does the 20 minutes of original stand-up a night. I think he's exhausted.
That could be.
And I think he doesn't need the money, and I think he wants to do other things. He was a good actor.
He was good on Drew Carey Show.
Yeah. Yeah, he's talented.
You know, you gotta give credit to anybody. Somebody like Leno, for example. If I was making $50 million a year,
I know, right? You'd just retire after 2 years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, after 2 years, I'd be like,
My grandkids are paid off.
Yeah.
So,
am I gonna keep working for again?
Can somebody get a Paul Schaefer jacket that's not out of Liberace's closet?
He's pretty gay, allegedly, isn't he?
I don't know, but his jackets are just terrible.
I don't even know if it's allegedly. Paul may be out.
Yeah, where's Paul?
Yeah.
Take away the one thing about him.
Take away his gay or take away the jacket?
Well, no, he can still wear his stupid sunglasses. Those don't bother me as much.
By the way, is SNL not like the worst show on TV?
Wait, what?
SNL. It's the worst.
You know, I wanted to watch the season premiere because there's like three or four people from Chicago, and two of them I've seen do improv a bunch of times, and I just wanted to see how they were.
Were they good when you saw them?
You know what?
I didn't watch it last
week. I feel like SNL is becoming a dead end for the, you know, it's not like a career.
There's no one really taking off from SNL. I mean, Jason Sudeikis keeps getting put in movies, but none of them have been hits because of Jason Sudeikis.
Well, my point is we're...
Well, I mean,
the last...
Fey, Amy
no,
Poehler.
But I'm talking about people that have graduated from there. Tina Fey is doing well, but her show gets terrible ratings. I mean, quote, well as Tina's doing, 30 Rock's ratings are god-awful. They're terrible.
I was disgusted.
They're not even getting a full season. They're getting 13 episodes, and they're done. They're ending it this year.
Really?
Yeah, she can win Emmys every year. Caesar, once again, this is not about who we like or don't like. This is about the fact that they don't do good business.
I mean,
I guess here's
my point. I don't get the Jimmy Fallon thing. I'm sure he's a great guy.
He is a good guy.
But
from what I hear.
I don't understand. I just don't get he's just not
it's
my
flavor.
It's
because Jimmy's a good guy.
Okay, he's not my flavor.
Jimmy's a good guy, and he has an alternative brand of comedy that younger kids like.
Okay.
That's why they like him.
Next thing. But other than Will Ferrell, who's the last big person to come out of SNL?
I mean, I guess you can argue it. But once again, you can argue Amy Poehler, but Parks and Rec's ratings are awful.
No, that's not even... Amy, when's the next time...
Their ratings are bad.
Here. It's just like Ron Zimmerman. When's the last time you heard, oh, did you see the new Amy Poehler movie that came out?
But I don't think Amy Poehler's been in a lot of movies. I think she's mostly doing
no,
TV.
No, but we make... Here's what it's about. What Mikey's asking is not who you like that's graduated from SNL. Who's become a big movie star? Who's become
a
big
Tina
star?
Fey, and I'm not a big Tina Fey.
Will Ferrell. Date Night didn't do as well as they were hoping. Baby's Mama did all right. It wasn't the hit they were hoping. And that's why Tina hasn't had a movie since, by the way. Because Tina would rather just do her show than work so long on a movie and not get paid that well. Will Ferrell is probably the last guy.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah, and he's very played out.
I think you guys are wrong about him being played out.
Nah, he's fine. Right.
Well, forget about ratings for a second. Seven fucking seasons of a show is a fucking massive success.
No, it's not. It is, and it's not. Caesar, if you're on the worst network in television, where you're getting a rating of a 1.4 between 18 and 49, you may be the best on that shitty network, but when Univision and Telemundo is beating you live, you're not that successful.
Yeah, and if you have a TV show called Whitney on the network.
Yeah, and by the way, we say 7 years, so we're assuming it's boatloads of money.
You're forgetting Univision has that delightful Jorge Ramos.
That's true.
Well, yeah, who doesn't like Jorge?
I've seen the billboards. Yeah. Now I think
Jorge.
They have a show about Pablo Escobar.
Here's the thing people need to understand about the TV business right now. If you're getting a 1.4, 18 to 49, and even if you're in syndication, your syndication deal is not that great. It's not Seinfeld. It's not even King of Queens. It's not even Yes, Dear. The rating games are way different. Yes, Dear would be the number one show on TV right now if their ratings from back then were on today. They'd be the number one show on TV.
Yeah, but I think TV is down
bingo
all the way around.
Bingo.
But
people are losing money in it. The only way these TV shows make money, like 30 Rock, and this is what I'm trying to explain to Caesar. The reason 30 Rock, Community, and all these shows are so lowly rated have stayed around, there's two reasons. One, they have nothing to replace it because they just don't have good programming. But two, and this is the biggest deal, they have been losing money on all those shows. The only way they make their money back is through syndication. That's it. That's the only way they make their money back. They have been losing money off of 30 Rock for 3-4 years. They never made money off of 30 Rock until they sold it in syndication. NBC, Tina Fey is not making as much as we want to think. Yeah. Yeah, we'll wrap up.
Yeah.
We'll wrap up. Mikey, you got anything else?
No.
Good debate here. Good conversation.
That shows right now are definitely on cable.
I'm trying to. Oh, can we just say this Will Ferrell thing, too? He may or may not be played, but I do want to say the campaign cost $20 million and it's made like 70. And you know what? Well, I wasn't huge on it, but it was okay.
Oh,
but
did you see it? 3/4 of it was
solid. It was okay. Yeah, that's about right. But you know what? He may be played. He still draws. It's an R-rated movie that costs $20 million. He still draws.
I'm sick of seeing him play the same character all the time.
Obama, that's not his choice. That's never the actor's
choice. Yeah. They're just writing him roles that are based off of what he's done.
He doesn't have to take
him. No, he doesn't have to take him. That's the actor's choice. That's the one thing about that is, yes, he doesn't have to take him. But then he did his one-man show on Broadway with the George Bush role, and he won a Tony, and,
you know
he's trying. Well, Everything Must Go, I thought, was underrated.
I think at the same time, though, I mean, somebody like Will Ferrell, he's got to be worth at least $100 million by now.
Oh, more. Is there anyone else from SNL that's made it since Will Ferrell?
Huh?
Is there anything else? Is there anybody else since
here,
SNL?
Here, quick thing that we'll throw in here. Just to get an idea. We can't name anybody after Will Ferrell. How many people can you name before Will Ferrell?
1,000. Yeah.
I would say the two biggest are Amy Poehler and...
And they're not even... They're
I know, but I'm
Faye.
Saying those are, the last two. Those are the last two.
Before that, you had Chris Farley, you had David Spade, you had Dana Carvey, you had Bill Murray. I mean, you could just
Seth
keep going
Myers,
and going and going.
Seth Meyers will have a career after SNL. He won't be a star.
He's not on SNL.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Wait, I was thinking of somebody else.
He won't be a star, though.
Here's part of the problem. All right, we're all in our late 20s, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we're not old yet, but we're moving our way towards for the next generation to come in. How many fucking people do you think how many kids between the ages of 18 and 21 do we talk to that probably watch Saturday Night Live?
I bet you
are
a lot
we talking about
watch.
Women I know, or...
You know what? You did that to yourself.
Listen, pals. If anyone has experience with the 19-year-old ladies,
all right. Let's
I can
get
tell
past
you about
that. So answer the fucking question.
No, they don't watch it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to say is nobody watches it anymore except older guys like Bruce Fretz and Ken Hamill and
which
all
means
that
show's going to die in the next 5 to 10 years.
It'll never die.
I don't think it'll ever die It costs so little to produce because Lauren pays shit.
And they made that time slot.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I mean, what are they
going to
put in that?
And they get tons of advertising. They'll end it when they want.
They can draw a 1.5 or a 2, but what are they going to put in that time slot that's ever going to do better than that? Nothing.
They still get
Saturday at 10:35. Yeah.
Tons of advertising. They invented that time slot.
And merchandise because SNL does really well with merchandise and stuff like that.
I miss Mad TV.
Yeah. And don't forget, Lauren owns everything that happens with that show. Everything. You want to talk about a guy worth money? That's the guy. He owns everything.
Maybe he's not a nice person.
All right, I'm done.
That's good gossip, Chuck. Allegedly. He's not a nice person.
I've never met him. I don't know.
Before I sign off, I don't want to be wrong about this if Will Ferrell's the last one. Will Ferrell's the last one?
Andy
Samberg. No, that's my boy bombed.
No.
Terribly. Terribly. Anything, Lee?
No, the movie with Rashida Jones wasn't bad. I know.
A little too pretentious.
I know.
A little too pretentious for me.
Is he going with foreign films again?
No. It's this movie about this couple who are getting a divorce, but they're like best of friends, and they still hang out all the time. And blah, blah,
but
blah.
Yes, the point is, yeah, Andy Samberg.
By the way, there's no such couple like that.
No,
it's a totally horseshit movie.
Yeah,
unless she dated a gay guy, and they broke up and became best friends. If Andy Samberg's a gay in there, okay.
I don't know. People got some weird situations. Some people live in RVs. Anyway, thank you for listening.
And speaking of dead black men.
Hey, there you go. What?
Lee, anything else?
No.
Okay. Mikey, anything else? Chucky, anything else? Nothing to plug? Nothing to plug? Nothing to plug?
Okay, we're going to rub olive oil on ourselves now.
Yeah, I'm going to go rub olive oil on my body outside.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for listening to Overtime. I want to thank Joe Carnahan at Carno Joe. I want to thank Frank Grillo at Frank Grillo. I want to thank Bruce Fretz at Bruce Fretz. I want to thank Nick Searcy. What's Nick Searcy's handle? Yes, Nick Searcy. Yes, Nick Searcy. Yes, Nick Searcy. Justified, of course. You can catch this this winter. End of Watch is Friday, September 21st. And anything else?
And hold on, hope that we get Ric Flair on the show.
And if you're listening to this in the next few days, Bruce Fretz's blog on the Sundance blog is the Sundance website. Go to sundance.com.
Anal beads.
And anal beads. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.